let's start the show.
For Thursday, August 17th, 2017. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com.
Right.
Look at that fucking squirrel on my bird feeder.
And then suddenly, the Enterprise D's bridge.
You know what that means with that intro? We have one of two special guests on the podcast. It's just one of them. It's Will Smith joining us.
Am I special or is Jeremy special?
I think you're special.
Oh, thank you.
Will's very special.
That way. You were implying that that could mean there's another guest on the show.
Yeah.
Right, that intro only plays when either Will or Gary come on.
Well, Gary hasn't been on in so long.
Exactly.
Does Gary even still podcast? I mean, he was on the Giant Bombcast a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's podcasting.
Promised. He did promise.
He promised when we, after Rogue One came out, last December, he promised he'd jump on the podcast at some point when he had a free moment, and he never has.
Well, we've got Jen Orso here.
Yes, we got his gal.
Right.
I swear to God, I thought that was Neo.
What?
What?
Yeah, completely different characters. The chair is from The Matrix.
It looks like Sad Keanu from the back.
Fair.
No, we do have a Sad Keanu somewhere. So, we got Will back on the podcast. Will of
Foo VR.
Foo VR. Wearing the shirt. Repping.
I'm repping.
Repping today.
Well, we're doing something else afterwards.
Yes.
And I needed to wear the brand.
Will is all over tested this week.
I'm blown up tested. We're bringing things out a whole new door.
We're also calling out people's t-shirts now.
Yeah, I thought you didn't do that. You told me to stop doing that like 5 years ago.
And we realized at a point in a podcast number 412 that we got to bring it back.
I mean, it's a classic tradition.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a tradition. It definitely is a canary in the coal mine.
It's like what ifs.
So Jeremy's also back, back in the sense that you were here last week, but you were gone in between that.
I was gone almost the whole time.
I want to hear about your trip.
I went to a family reunion in Wisconsin, which isn't worth reporting on, but in order to get
back. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Do you have a fish fry? What do you do at family reunions in Wisconsin?
We do eat. I saw a magic show, actually.
Okay.
A magic show at Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It's kind of the middle of nowhere.
So far, you said this wasn't worth reporting on, and everything that you've said so far has been interesting.
There's a lake.
I forgot.
Magic.
What's interesting about Lake Geneva to this audience might be that one of the founders of Dungeons & Dragons lived there. I forget his name.
Gary Gygax?
I forget. I don't think it was Gygax.
Okay.
Maybe. In any case, I saw a magic show there, and I was astounded. It was amazing. So if you're in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, go downtown and watch the magic show because it's like Vegas level stuff in this tiny little theater that will blow your mind. Like
hold on. This Vegas level is a high
bar. Are there white tigers?
That's what I'm saying. Okay, there's not tigers, but there's a helicopter. I'm telling you,
full size helicopter, yes,
like flying,
and that can fit in this small theater. I am skeptical.
I think about 30 people can fit in the audience in this theater.
Have they ever made the Statue of Liberty disappear
and
there?
For his finale, he showed an open theater, then he closed the curtains, and about 3 seconds later, he opened them back up, and there was a whole freaking helicopter back there.
That's the big payoff.
Pretty good.
He put a woman in a box,
yeah,
with acrylic sides.
Yeah.
He sawed her in half. You could see her body the whole time.
Yes.
He then split her apart. Walked around her torso, wheeled her torso into the audience.
And it was still moving.
Into the audience.
And the torso was moving?
Yes, and she was talking to people.
So it was two people.
There was nothing underneath her. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Were you on drugs?
Professional skeptic. No.
Are you sure?
You don't understand. I had the highest level of skepticism going in.
What? Well, because it's a small town magic show.
Exactly.
You should have the highest level of skepticism.
So, you know, I went to a magic show at E3. At not the Magic Castle, but like the house that the Magic Castle people built, like their home house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was this invite-only thing. And like I saw the best ventriloquist I've ever seen in my life there. It was an amazing ventriloquy act. I didn't
a good ventriloquist.
Like, look, I think you think about ventriloquism, you're thinking about Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop and like all the classic 70s and 60s.
No, not necessarily. I'm thinking of Goosebumps. Haunted ventriloquist dummies.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what drinking while talking.
Yes.
No. So this one was a completely postmodern ventriloquist act that it was spectacular. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. I'm not going to try to describe it here. I apologize for bringing it up.
It was like
a mistake.
Jeff Durham thing.
No, it was not a Jeff Durham thing.
Okay.
Oh, I'm thinking about Jeff Foxworthy.
No, there's a very popular.
Is he the guy that's on the sign in Vegas with the dummy?
Yes.
When you come into the airport in Vegas?
I think so.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that guy.
Yeah, Jeff Dunham. Sorry, Jeff Dunham is a world fame. He's the probably the most popular modern ventriloquist and the one people most associate with contemporary Vegas.
I think the guy who did this act, I wish I could remember his name. Frank was there too. But he was on America's Got Talent.
I want to know about more about this magic show that Jeff went to in Lake Geneva. Well,
I'm just laughing because I just looked it up, and it is the number one magic show in Lake Geneva.
Well, congratulations.
Of course.
Which I think is funny. But the guy's name is Tristan Crist, and I swear you're going to see him on this on the Penn and Teller show. Yeah, exactly. He is not actually scheduled to be on there, but I'm telling you, he'll be there.
And this is Crist, C-R-I-S-T.
Yeah, exactly. Really hot magic show. I mean, and it was a little backwards in some respects. Like, there's a little bit of Joe Bluth going on with the music.
Oh.
You know, not quite.
Oh, like dramatic.
Not quite like Europe level.
There's a place for that.
In magic shows.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I suppose so. But there's also like the scantily clad women who are making funny, you know, eyes at the audience who get sawed in half. And it's a little dated in that respect. But it is a solid magic show. And I think most of these tricks are his own.
Hmm.
Anyway, but I took a train back.
Wait, what?
It's over.
Before you talk, you mentioned disappearing the Statue of Liberty, which David Copperfield did how many years ago?
1986, I think.
1986. Wasn't there a recent, there's a podcast episode about that. I'm not
really?
Sure. It might have been Radiolab, or it might have been This American Life. Do you know how he did that?
Mirrors.
Nice. It was not mirrors.
Lasers?
It's one of those things.
Magnets?
So I was listening
How
to this radio.
Work,
I was listening to this podcast, and they said, if you don't want to know, because there is, I do believe there is a mystique about not knowing how, there's more fun in the mystery and
of course.
And in not knowing than necessarily, once you figure it out, it's like, I guess that was obvious. So do you guys want to know? How he did it.
You're asking us or you're asking the hundreds of thousands of people listening at home?
I'm asking you guys.
Yeah, I want to know.
I'm good either way.
I want to know.
You want to know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was done in the 80s. It was broadcast on live television. Uh-huh.
People around New York reported that the Statue of Liberty disappeared.
And I don't think that's actually – I think people reported as like – First of all, the people in New York who could see the Statue of Liberty, they saw it still. It did not actually disappear.
It did not actually. Wow.
So the way it was set up was it was a television broadcast program. They built this this barge, basically, that people sat in. And it was in the on the river. And they had the barge and they had lights shining on the Statue of Liberty and helicopters circling it. And then the trick happened. Like they had a giant curtain.
Yeah.
And then once the curtain fell, it was gone. Right. And it was for the people, and the reactions from the people on the barge.
So it was only the people from the barge that saw it disappear, though.
That's right.
Like a limited field of view.
Perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's there you go. That you just solved it.
So did they just rotate the barge 90 degrees and aim it at a different part of the island?
That is exactly what they did.
Wow.
Wait, so they had two helicopters?
It was field of view. Well, the helicopter was in on it.
So the helicopter was rotating at the same time.
The helicopter was just flying to a different place and into an empty platform. The people he fooled were not the people on the barge, because there's some debate about whether the people on the barge were in on it.
Plants.
And it's whether they did this multiple times, got the best reactions. It's David Blaine stuff, right? It's the people they fooled were the people watching at home.
Well, yeah, because like on a 480p TV.
It sure looked effective.
480i TV.
But apparently they built this barge up with a rotating platform that had the best bearings that you could not detect were moving, even
millions
though you were
sitting
on
those bearings.
That's what I'm skeptical of.
Look,
I don't know if people sitting there, if you can't tell within the however minute, like 30 seconds it takes from the drop the curtain, raise the curtain.
But if you're on a boat, there's already some movement, so you're going to be a little jacked up, and it might be
that's
easier
true.
To disguise that movement if you're on a boat.
Were the people on the boat blindfolded or something?
No, they were just standing there. So there were two.
Look, they didn't open
there
the
were two
bar.
Trusses. There was like a gantry system with the curtain.
Yeah,
and they raised the curtain, and then they dropped the curtain, and they rotated it like 30 degrees, mm-hmm. just enough so that the Statue of Liberty was hidden behind one of the truss systems.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
The whole thing's very sketchy.
Yes.
Anything on TV is a little sketchy.
Well, I think the broadcast network that said it was like there's no special effect, and it was back in the 80s. There were no – they were doing this quote-unquote live. They weren't mixing, comping things in. It was – no in-camera effects is all done for real. So they were being honest in that sense, but they weren't being honest in the fact that, you know,
Obviously, there's a trick. It's magic.
It's an illusion. You don't believe in real magic?
I don't trust magic on TV.
I saw good rubber band, like hand. I like up close, like hand magic on TV.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's good. Card tricks, rubber band tricks, stuff that you don't see all the time.
Ricky Jay is a great documentary. There's the show that Jeremy mentioned, Fool Us, that Penn and Teller do. TV show on, I think, CW is fantastic. You watch a ton of those clips on YouTube. They're really fun to watch.
What was your fish fry situation at this family reunion?
No fishes.
No fishes?
We had burgers, which, god damn, I mean, these are some good burgers. My mother-in-law makes a crazy good burger.
Wow.
I mean, the best. And we had a good time. You know, we went on a boat.
Yeah.
Did some swimming.
Yeah.
They have a swing.
Barbecue? You got a tire swing? Or, like, are you talking about, like, a rubber swing?
No, like, just
a,
like, a swing
into the water?
Swing. Just a standard
just
swing.
A, like a...
But tall.
Like did you put on, like, a funny hat? And was it, like, that flashback from the Muppet movie where Kermit and Piggy, they see their whole life together?
Oh, my gosh. You went there.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen that movie in too long.
Okay.
You've been watching that?
It's one of my favorites.
No, you know, it was pretty standard. Besides the magic show, it was pretty good. I wanted to talk about the train ride.
You rode on a train?
Yeah.
Did you do the Empire Builder?
No, the California...
Oh, the Zephyr.
Zephyr.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and it was Amtrak line takes 3 days to get
3 days.
From Chicago to Emeryville. So end of line to end of line.
And full days?
How do you get from Emeryville to here?
That's like another afternoon.
That's another 3 days.
Like
two nights.
You get on 2 in the afternoon, you get off at 4 in the afternoon.
Okay, so two nights. You still get
two nights.
A full one full beginning wake up day.
Yeah.
And two, like, an evening,
exactly.
And also a morning. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Little over 48 hours.
Okay.
It was a good trip. It was
kids like it?
Yeah, because they just get to hang out, you know, and just they can read books or do iPads or activity books.
Did you get a Pullman or did you do chairs?
No, we had a sleeper car. So okay. Not a car, but like a room. So you get a family room, which is just enough space for two adults and two kids.
Much smaller than this room.
Oh my gosh, right, this room would be luxurious. Yeah,
it's like a cruise ship, but narrow.
Yeah, a little smaller than a cruise ship. You know, it's more like submarine level.
You get a window. Mm-hmm.
But it's great because that's what you do. You just look out the window. You see this beautiful country.
Do they narrate?
Going through the Rockies. They do if you go in the observation car. Mm. They tell you a little about the history. But the Rockies and the Sierras...
You see parts of that you can never see from the road, right?
Yeah. And you don't see the highway for these stretches, and it's just gorgeous. And you're going down the Colorado River, and all the rafters, there's a tradition among them to moon the trains. And they warn you about this on the PA system. So if you have kids...
If you don't want to see butts.
Maybe you don't want to have them see a butt and remember that for the rest of their lives. We, of course, said, children, look.
Look, the yokels.
Look.
So we got mooned twice. It was glorious.
Wow. The double moon.
It was wonderful.
What does it mean?
And then you get food, which is decent. Like, you get steak and shrimp. Like,
wait, describe, because recently, having been to Europe, they have their high-speed rail, and I took a train, didn't get a sleeper car. This is just a 5-hour train. And they serve you meals, but it's like airplane food, right?
Yeah.
And we didn't have and the dining car is kind of like, you know, because there's only so much width to a train. The dining car is like half the width of the train car, and that is the cafeteria, you know, the window.
Hmm.
And then the other half is the line, just wait in line. So it's not very glamorous at all. It's not like
Amtrak, it's booths on both sides, and there's an aisle down the middle that the
kitchen is the next car over.
The kitchen's downstairs.
Yeah. Oh. So it's sit-down booths.
It's a dumb waiter.
You actually two...
So there's literally Morlocks underneath your feet. It's just like Snowpiercer.
Enjoy those cockroaches.
Yeah.
Yummy.
The food's not bad. It's like they are, if you pay for them, it's like $35 for this steak dinner.
Huh.
But it comes with a sleeper
each
car.
Each person?
Yeah, but it comes with a sleeper car. So it's just everybody eats what they want.
Oh, so the sleeper car is all inclusive.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice.
Limited drinks.
That explains why, because those sleeper car tickets are expensive.
And you stop a lot. And I went through Donner Lake, Donner Pass.
Yeah.
And I read up on that.
Did you try the snacks?
No, we didn't stop there.
Didn't get the jerky?
The fish sticks?
No. The hide? No. But then I've read about it, and man, I mean, I knew about it.
Yeah.
But I had never really done any research
really
on it.
Up your appetite,
read the entire Wikipedia entry.
How's your Wi-Fi?
My goodness.
How's your Wi-Fi or your cellular throughout?
It's all cellular. What's amazing is, like, when you do get cellular and you connect your laptop and you're actually browsing the web on a train, that feels a little, like, it's little unnatural.
That's more magical than
Tristan
Wi-Fi on an airplane.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I don't know.
I'm asking.
No. Wait, airplane is definitely more magical.
Yeah. Okay. international airplane flight is the most magical. Let's be clear. International, high, relatively high-speed Wi-Fi.
It's expensive and because you're using your data on a train. That's the problem.
Well, if you have unlimited data, you don't have a problem.
Oh, I don't have that anymore.
You can get it again. Yeah, but you can turn it back on.
No, I don't want to deal with that anymore. But anyway, good trip. I mean, if you're in a hurry, you can't do a train. But if you're not in a hurry and you want to see this country, take a train. Yeah, I love that method of travel. And if you have kids, they're fine with it because they just get to relax and
did you guys watch the trailer for Murder on the Orient Express?
No.
That would be a good movie to watch.
How much iPad time? Or a Royal, what is it, Grand Budapest? No, the other one. What's Darjeeling Express?
Oh, right. Darjeeling Limited.
My least favorite Wes Anderson film.
Really?
Yeah.
Grand Budapest is my least favorite.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It's charming.
Yeah. It's okay. Charming. Charming. They're all charming. Yeah. What was it? Highlights? What was the best thing you saw?
Out the window.
Did you see any buffalo or was it just the moons?
We saw wild horses.
Okay.
That was great.
Mustangs?
I mean, the whole trip through the Rockies is insane. It's just gorgeous.
Is there a 3 a.m. poker game that happens in the diner car?
Oh, man.
Like, I would be tempted not to sleep and just, I mean, you're on a train. There's America's happening. Even in the middle of the night,
you're right.
What are people doing in the middle of the night?
I don't know. I was with the kids. So that's where you come in. Tell me about the nightlife.
The secret life.
Yes.
So that's the train that they do Train Jam on every year.
What's Train Jam?
Train Jam. Do you not know what Train Jam is?
Is this like a party cruise where like the cruise is 2,000 people, but only like 50 of them are this themed thing?
It's
one car of a 50-car train is themed.
No. It started out that way. So Train Jam is a game jam that runs in the days preceding GDC. Sorry about that.
In America?
In America. GDC America. the one that's in San Francisco every March.
I know GDC, but I didn't know where the Train Jam was.
Let's see. I want to make sure I get the person who organizes its name right. It's Ariel something. I can't remember her last name. So they start in Chicago. They take the Zephyr, the California Zephyr.
They do.
From Chicago to San Francisco.
And they make a game?
And it's a game jam. So everybody makes games.
Wow. That sounds great. 52 hours to make a game.
Yeah. And they, that's what we wanted. It's from March 17th, 15th to 17th, 2018, Chicago to San Francisco. What's his name? The Australian guy who used to write for us back in the old days.
A lot of them.
God. No. Here. He was one of the first three stringers. He came on with Wes and Braga, and he was the third guy.
Another Will?
No, it wasn't another Will. Paul. And I feel like, it wasn't Paul. It was before Paul.
Okay.
Anyway.
Great podcasting.
Anyway, Will. I'm out of practice on the podcasting. It's Adriel Wallach. It does run Train Jam. And so last year, the weather wasn't cooperative and they were afraid that the train wasn't going to get cleared, but they had to like clear the tracks of snow.
Wow, extra time.
But it was awesome because that meant that when they came through, it was the first Zephyr run of that time period in a while. And it was like all virgin snow. And she said it was the most gorgeous thing they'd ever seen.
Oh, I didn't know they shut down part of the year.
If the weather is inclement, then they can't they can't ride that train through the Rockies. So.
I think I follow a guy named Robin Baumgarten on Twitter. He makes a game called the Line Wobbler, which if you go in any of these like indie game festivals, you'll see it there.
Yeah.
It's a one-dimensional game. It's basically a string of LEDs, and it's a lot of fun. One analog joystick, and it's like in a pitfall.
It's a great game. Yeah.
You have to get from one end of the LED strip to the other, and you have to avoid these bad guys and these obstacles. And it's really well done. But he tweeted once about a train jam. This must be that. I had no idea.
This is that. It is a delightful thing. Like it feels ridiculous for me to go do that. With the fact that I live in San Francisco, Jason Imms is who I was thinking of. Also, sorry, Jason. It's a neat event, and you get to do the train ride, and you get the train. I think in the old days it was like 50 people on the train. Now the whole train is full of computer nerds, and I think they have an entire train dedicated to Train Jam now.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
If you want to go hang out with a bunch of cool game developers and learn about making games, that seems like a good way to do it. And they do scholarships for students and stuff like that.
A murder on that train would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends that ride that train. I'd love to see one of them die, Norm.
Yeah,
there's plenty of seats on that
actual
train.
Actual murder is not cool.
No, murder is never
a
okay.
Murder game. A board game.
There you go.
Murder board game.
A murder board game is
there you go.
Yeah, and I think they do paper and physical games. If you go to GDC, they usually have all the games or a lot of the games that come out of that jam set up on like the third floor of Moscone West. So
what they
check
should
it out.
Do is, you know, you can do the dinner party games.
Yeah.
Like dress up dinner party games.
Yep.
And there is one that is Murder on Orient Express.
Yep.
They should do that on the train. I bet people have done that.
It's a good idea.
You love that stuff.
I'm sure that people have done that on the Orient Express.
The dinner party puzzle games where you pick a character. There's a Star Trek one.
An escape room, perhaps, on a train? Where you have to escape each car of a train in sequence?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to hit the wrong door and Snowpiercer out of there.
Nope.
What have you been up to, Will?
I've been doing a kind of a lot of stuff that I can't talk about today.
Jeez.
But we'll be able to talk about it next week and the first week in September. We have, since I think I saw you guys last, we've recorded a couple episodes of the Foo Show that are in the can and just waiting on us to have time to finish. One is with a biophysical chemist or biochemist named Sean Douglas, who makes nanomachines out of DNA. And we get all powers of 10 with him and get crazy and see how nanomachines work.
That
which
sounds
is really
like a
cool.
Great application of Foo.
I thought so. We put a fairly ridiculous amount of time into making the world that we explored using a lot of his assets, and then we built some of our own, and like we literally shrink down and down and down and down and down. We did another one with the guys who make Warhammer 2, Total War Warhammer 2. And just like they taught me about Warhammer. I'm not a Warhammer guy, guys.
No, it's all right. I'm not a D&D guy.
And I learned about the difference between Warhammer 40K or 20K. Like I learned about the difference between the ones with guns and the ones that are just orcs beating the shit out of elves and dwarves and stuff.
It's all the same universe, right?
It's all the same universe, just, but like 20,000 years apart.
Sure. Yeah. Is it the orcs there in the future, in the post 40K apocalypse?
Yes, the orcs, the green guys that look like Warcraft orcs that Warcraft probably ripped off are orcs from the past.
Oh, they're in the past.
But the Total War Warhammer games are set in the early timeline where it's all like medieval warfare and there's magic and like it's not the guys going Space Marines, which is what we all remember from that Warhammer Space Marines game. It was a good talk. It was really interesting to talk to those dudes, and they love Warhammer. So those are as soon as we finish doing the contract stuff that we're doing right now, which I'll be able to share next week, hopefully, some of it. And then again on September 6th, even more.
Outstanding.
Stay tuned at Will Smith.
Yeah, at Will Smith on Twitter. And I'm also playing a lot of PUBG.
Yes, I want to hear about your PUBG. Is PUBG or is it PUBG?
I call it both because I think PUBG is terrible and I like things that are terrible sometimes.
Okay.
It's PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is the name of the game.
Let's talk a little bit about it, but we've never had a seasoned Twitch streamer on the podcast here.
I have put literal hundreds of hours into this game at this point.
The stats show themselves. You and Gary.
Have you lost track of your chicken dinners?
I do not know how many chicken dinners I've eaten at this point.
Wow. Statistically, I'm very impressed because like the amount of chicken dinners I see between you and Gary and the friends you play with.
I'm on a real cold streak right now. Yeah.
Right? So there are a lot of losers out there who are not getting chicken dinners for every chicken dinner you got.
So if you're playing a squad game, it's one team out of 25 or 26 is going to win.
Yep.
But yeah, so the setup for the game, if you don't know what it is it's basically Battle Royale, right? You and 99 of your friends.
The listeners know. They're just very misinformed about the mechanics.
You guys explained how it worked.
Yes.
And the true, this is only a test fashion.
tell us, though, about the streaming lifestyle and like what it means to stream these games and the intensity that goes into.
I started streaming this game because I actually really like watching people like I never understood, like you used to watch StarCraft a lot and I kind of like I understand that conceptually, but it wasn't for me.
Well, there were commentators.
Yeah. But like I wasn't into StarCraft enough, and like I understood like basic build orders and stuff like that, but I didn't care about high level strategy enough
or
to like
personalities.
Yeah, to watch hours and hours of StarCraft games. Same thing for Dota. Like I've watched bits. Like I watched the noob feed for the International a couple of times, and it's interesting, but it didn't grab me.
Wait, there's a noob feed?
Yeah. So when Valve does the International, the best one I think was the TI4 one four or five years ago, and they do different commentary. Like they do a commentary for people who don't understand Dota.
That's brilliant.
It's really smart. They've only done it really, really well once, maybe twice. The one this year wasn't so hot. But you know, like it's Valve, so they're learning and
love
trying
the
new
concept,
stuff
though.
So yeah, so I started playing this, and then I realized I was like watching as much as I was playing. It is, you know how when you hear about emergent games where you play the game and then people tell you all these amazing stories about weird shit that happens and it sounds really cool, and then you play the game and none of that stuff ever happens?
Yeah.
This game is not that.
The stuff actually happens.
The stuff actually happens. Like, the vehicles, it is a really good mix of janky and massive and multiplayer.
It's a murder simulator.
Kind of, yeah. So you
survival
drop,
simulator.
So you get thrown out of this airplane with 100 people. You have to kill all of them to get a chicken dinner. And before you can kill them, you have to go find weapons and scrounge that stuff out of the world. And it is an endlessly fascinating game.
Everyone parachutes out naked.
Everything
basically.
I mean,
like with the t-shirt on your back.
Yeah.
So no weapons, no armor.
Just your fists.
My issue with this concept, like, I love the concept of the Battle Royale, right? The Battle Royale too bad you got the frying pan, you land in the wrong place. That like is perfect for storytelling. The fact that most people who play now, especially the people who are streaming and playing, are so good at this game that there's already multiple meta levels above the base game in terms of the stunts they're doing, in terms of the gear they're equipping. It becomes less accessible, and it takes away from the terror.
Well, so this is the thing that grabbed me about the game. There are tons of meta levels. Like, it's like a pancake, basically, right? The first meta level is that you drop in, you loot weapons, and
it's a flaky croissant, many levels.
Yeah, the most terrifying thing that can happen to you is seeing another human being, right?
Early on,
if you've just started playing and you're playing by yourself and you see another person, it's fucking scary, right? And then the next level is and you shoot at them and then they shoot you and you die immediately, probably. The next level is when you've played enough that you think, oh, I can't kill that person right now. I'm not going to shoot, right? And you hold off and you learn to control. It's much more of a strategic and measured pace than, say, your Call of Duty, where as soon as you see somebody, you should put a bullet in their head or they're going to kill you first. And like concealment and cover and things like that make much more sense, are much more important, like they are with something like Arma. And you can get that kind of tense, you know, more realistic combat situation like you do with Arma, but in a 40-minute game instead of a 6-hour game, which is what was all my experiences with Arma.
I feel like the game would benefit from more stakes. You know, the game's lasting longer.
You think chicken dinner's not enough?
Buy-ins, rewards, and heist, and more drawn out.
I'm gonna go ahead and tell you, I've won at this point probably a couple of dozen, maybe 20 chicken dinners.
Wow,
they're all satisfying.
Really?
Like last night, I started streaming. The first fight of the night was basically me soloing to number two and then choking on the very last guy.
What does that feel like? So tell us, because you've done this obviously more than 20 times now. What does it feel like when you're like the last three people? Because by then the world has shrunken down, the barrier's down. It's like it's the size of a town or something.
It's usually 150 or 100 meters across at that point. A circle.
What does that feel like? 150 meters is not big at all. Like, you know, no, where the person's
like, you can't
be.
Use an 8x scope when you're in those final circles because it's too much zoom.
So you've survived for at least 20 minutes. You've gotten down.
Yeah.
Do you by then most likely know where the other person is? Or
sometimes.
Have a sense of like,
sometimes.
Are you hunting each other or just like they'll pop up? And is it like a real cat and mouse at that point?
So last night, the final circles were bisected by a hill. So some people were on one side of the hill. Some people were on the other. I was in
a
field.
One.
No, this was solo.
Oh, solo. Okay.
So I was in a field. I knew where all the people in the field were, but then there were two or three, four people on the other side of that hill. No clue, right? So I'm sitting there. I take care of the guys on my side of the field, and then the circle moves me over to the other side of the hill when I was hoping that they would get pushed over toward me, and I have to crest that hill, and I got one of them, but the other one got me. So like it's in the beginning when you get to the first time you get to like one of those close final circles, you're going to get the shakes. Like I get literal adrenaline response. I used to get literal.
For.
I mean, it was something I'd never had in a video game before. Right?
Can't wait to go home, put the family to bed.
Yeah.
And get online so I can get my fix.
Get some of that
get
good
my
murder.
Shakes.
But so. That goes away after a while. You get used to it, right?
You get new thrills.
Yeah, and then that's when you start flipping motorcycles and all that business. There's
chaos.
There's an insane amount of depth to this game. It's still really accessible. You can bring new people in. I highly encourage you to go out and hop in a duo with somebody who like knows what they're doing, so that you're not dragging down a whole squad if you're new and don't know how to loot, don't know what weapons and stuff you need. There's a lot of internalized lore. It's a game that you kind of read the patch notes, and I haven't played a game like that in a really long time.
So the game's not even finished yet. It's still in early access, right? So what are they going to do before it's actually finished?
So the stuff that they're adding a lot of polished stuff. Like a couple of patches ago, they added animations for using healing items, whereas previously it was just like a ticker that counted down, basically, and that was all you saw. They're doing a lot of balance passes still. I think they're going to continue balance passing forever with this game, would be my guess, as long as people are playing.
Is there any indication that in the team game, at the end, when your team wins, that then it's free-for-all?
I want that so bad.
And one person in the team has to be the real chicken dinner winner?
Sorry, PETA.
Right.
Yeah, I would love that. I don't know that they're going to do that. They did ban a couple of streamers a few weeks ago for like teaming up with randos. And then, like, there were three guys, three of the better players streaming.
They team up with randos and then backstab? Is there friendly fire?
So then they only had a three-seat vehicle, so they had a three-seat motorcycle instead of a four-seat, and the rando wouldn't get out of the third seat for one of the good guys.
Why did he get banned for that?
So he just shot him in the head.
And he got banned?
The rando didn't get banned. The guy who shot him in the head got banned.
From the game?
Yeah, well, probably. I don't know if it was a temp or forever. It seems like he's using a new player name now. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, if you want to watch, I'm on twitch.tv/notthatwillsmith.
Don't throw away your shot.
No. Got to give that away. It's such a good game.
Check.
Wait, pop culture?
Yeah.
I thought that was pop culture. This is a loose ship over here.
Since we're half hour in, I figured we were at least to the tech section.
We're still in pop culture.
By the way, it was Gary Gygax in Lake Geneva.
Oh.
Yeah,
he's the only D&D founder that you know. I didn't know there were more than one. So some good news for fans of anime. Any fans of anime in the room? Miyazaki.
Yeah, I like Miyazaki.
Is coming back.
Really?
Working for Studio Ghibli, making a new film. The retirement was short-lived.
I don't feel like this is the first time. Is it?
I feel like when he retired last time, we had this conversation.
Yeah. Well, last time they made a big deal about the movie he made about the World War II plane, the designer of the Zero.
That it was the last film.
And that was going to be his last film. And Studio Ghibli had been putting out films afterward. He just didn't direct them. So turns out, how old is he, actually? That's a good question. But a recent newsletter from Studio Ghibli confirms that he's back in the office. Mm. The hiatus from 2013 to 2017 was very short-lived, and he's going to make a new film.
76.
Scorsese's like up there.
80.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's 80, but I think they're similar age. His newest film is called Boro the Caterpillar.
Is it about a caterpillar?
Or is this like
the Fireflies thing where it's not really about fireflies?
Oh, it's about hunger, starvation, and...
I don't think Grave of the Fireflies is a Miyazaki film.
No, it's not. So he's been apparently working on this film at home, just not at the studio, since the beginning of this year. But he's back in Studio Ghibli and working on the film. So looking forward to that.
I have to say, we went and saw Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service in theaters with a big crowd of people a few weeks ago.
They did a 5-day run, right, where every day was a different Miyazaki film.
It's 5 months.
Oh, is it 5 months?
Yeah, so there's one a month, and they do.
Is it a month or a week?
No, it's a month. Yeah. They're doing. I think the next one is Spirited Away, and they do dubs on Sunday matinees for kids and subs on Monday nights for adults.
Well,
yeah.
We watched Kiki's Delivery Service because we recently built a papercraft model from the film.
Which one?
Just her house.
Her parents' house?
Her parents' house. The one she leaves in the beginning of the film.
That's a good one, yeah.
Talking cat and everything.
That movie is delightful.
They're all good.
Scorsese is 74, so they're very similar age.
And peers.
Yeah, exactly. Fans of Lego, assume?
Yeah.
So, you know, Lego comes out. They have licenses for Star Wars, Marvel, superheroes.
They have everything.
Ninjago. They have movies.
They're their own brand.
Yes, and along with Disney, you know, they also are an IP factor of sorts, even though their movies come out of Warner Brothers. If you browse the Lego enthusiast websites and the forums, you may see leaks for box art because they manufacture in advance. And people have long used Lego box art and the names of even the sets to fish out plot points of movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible thing to do.
Are you going to spoil something?
No, totally not going to spoil anything. But I will spoil the one product that is supposed to be coming out later this year, and it is a BB-8 Star Wars Lego set. Like a similar scale? No, it's similar in scale to the R2 that you made.
The UCS?
Yes, but a BB-8. Now, I'm a little skeptical about this, because same with the R2.
It's Darth Vader.
Same with the R2, the spherical shape, Lego doesn't really lend itself to that.
R2 is awesome
because because R2 is more cylindrical with only the dome on the top. BB-8 is two spheres or a half dome and a sphere.
Dome is half of a sphere, you know.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
So one and a half spheres.
Only works for R2.
One and a half spheres for BB-8.
Yeah.
Now the leak photo of this BB-8 set did not indicate that the panels would be smooth, because sometimes when you make curved surfaces, you can have like the stepping of the bricks, and then you can also put on these panels, like in the Yellow Submarine. But it wasn't the case. That is theoretically coming out later this year.
So this photo is not supposed to be revealed.
This is not that.
Okay.
But what is not an official Lego set is a fan-made BB-8.
Oh.
That's amazing. There's a Flickr link. If you search Brothers Brick, this BB-8 that a fan made actually has motors inside that rotates. It's on a pedestal.
And it rotates his head, it looks like.
It rotates not only the head, but the body spins on the platform.
Shut up.
The body spins on the platform.
How does the body spin?
You got to enable Adobe Flash to play the video.
I was told not to do that.
Seems like a bad idea.
Here you go, Jeremy.
It's probably not worth it.
Oh, it's
not on a Windows machine, no less. Norm lives dangerously.
I'm plugged into power.
No fear.
Here it goes. Flip that switch. Look at that.
That's cool. So it's actually an illusion.
It's an illusion.
That's
because
a great idea. So half of the dome, or whatever we can see here, spins as though he's rolling.
Right.
But he actually stays stationary.
Yes. And then the head rotates around that and does a little bit of pivoting. The guy's name is Takamichi Iri, and he has a Flickr page with photos of this. Totally worth checking out. It brings more disappointment to the upcoming BB-8 official Lego set, because that one isn't going to be motorized, it looks like, and that one also doesn't have the flat panels that I like on my Lego sets.
I finally built my WALL-E.
That's a Kusu great set.
Kit. And yeah, I had the one that was the initial broken neck, like the bad neck, and I sent them a note, and they sent me the pieces to fix it.
Nice.
Along with instructions both for doing it from scratch or retrofitting the one you've already finished. It was really cool.
That is a beautiful...
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Did you know who designed that set?
Yeah, it was Angus...
It was Angus MacLean.
MacLean, yeah.
Pixar director.
Who was the co-director on Dory.
That's
and directed Toy Story of Terror, and I think Small Fry, one of the other Toy Story shorts.
You know your Pixar directors.
Look, man. I got this dialed in.
Yeah.
You need to get him over here to do a Lego with friends.
We actually did do a Lego with friends with him. It is on the site. Yeah.
What?
Yes.
What?
He built with Adam. I was on vacation.
What did they build?
I want to say. They built a Yellow Submarine, I believe.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
But he's
a Lego master builder too, right?
I don't know if he's actually he's definitely
official?
A mega fan, but I don't know if he's a certified, took the test to be a Lego master builder. Yeah.
Well, I was looking through your Twitter here. I was trying to find out how to sort by your most liked tweets. Do you have any idea what your most liked tweet would be?
You've
got
to go to faithstar.fm/WillSmith would be my guess.
Oh, that's beyond me. Well, Twitter has a new most liked tweet of all time.
It's not Ellen and her selfie at the Oscars?
Which is like a great photo, right? I mean, you understand why that was so popular.
It was also a promo piece. It was to promote the Samsung phone.
Oh, I forgot that.
It was like done with the Samsung phone.
That was a product placement?
It was a 100% product placement selfie.
She could have.
I mean,
that photo had no right to be that good. I mean, it turned out great.
In terms of how spontaneous it were, and
everybody's
the level of celebrity.
Nobody's eyes are closed.
Yep. Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
Anyway, new most liked tweet of all time, Barack Obama.
How many likes?
Over 4 million, I think. Quite a lot. Let me see here.
The official Twitter tweet about the fact that it's the most liked tweet itself has over 300,000 likes.
That's a lot of tweets.
That's meta level.
Let's see here.
Meta level likes.
Yeah, we're, so 4.2 million.
This is the one where he goes into signing the babies in the window wherever he walks. This is a Boss Baby tie-in.
You think this is product placement?
Yeah, this is totally DreamWorks pushing their Boss Baby nonsense on us.
No, he's
you have kids. Don't get them Boss Baby.
I think it's a Nelson Mandela quote. It's a three-part tweet. This is part one that got the most likes.
What is how many of those likes sustain post the first part?
Not as many.
Oh. It's a big trail. I bet it's a massive order drop of 10. Off.
But when somebody does the multis, do you really like all three? I don't like all three.
I like the last one.
That's too much work.
No, if someone does, if there's a tweet storm and it's like, read this thread,
yeah,
I like as many of those.
Do you?
As you like.
As I like.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because they resonate.
That gets weird, though.
It's like the Medium. It's like the Twitter equivalent of highlighting on Medium the sentences that you like.
But then you should highlight the first one so that people don't get lost. They jump in the middle. They don't know the context.
It's true.
I think you should only like the first one.
No, you retweet the first one.
I see.
But you like the ones that resonate.
The quote is, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion." A nice little antidote to what happened last week.
Yeah.
That is a topic we won't be discussing today.
No, that's the most political we're going to get. Let's talk about tech news.
Favestar gates your top tweet behind a paywall now.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Social media experts.
How much is narcissism worth to you?
Not whatever. You can't, not enough to click the link to find out how much narcissism is worth to them.
You can't redeem your clout points?
No, I don't think clout points are worth anything, Norm.
I dare you to check your clout.
I think it I turned
tells
it
you, I think it tells
I
you
it
last
off.
Checked last check clout. Does that even exist? I'm afraid to go.
Oh, it's still there.
Wow.
Oh no, I'm not a brand or an agency.
I can't believe it's a real company. So you mentioned that Studio Ghibli is the Miyazaki films are appearing at AMC theaters once a month. How often do you guys go to movie theaters these
Dude,
days?
I want you to explain this to me. This is crazy. I personally actually don't even go to the theater once a month.
You don't go to the theater?
No.
This past month I've been four times. In the past 30 days.
Yeah.
There are a lot of good movies out there.
No doubt. But you don't have children.
Yeah, children, it turns out, makes it a complex undertaking.
I thought going with children is a way for easy daycare.
Yeah, I thought about taking my daughter to see Wonder Woman and then decided that that was probably a bad idea after I watched Wonder Woman.
Well, it's not Dunkirk.
I thought about taking my child to see Dunkirk, and then I just realized that that's a bad idea because Dunkirk.
You're a good parent.
Plenty of kids' movies.
There's parents that make the opposite decision.
When I saw Fast and the Furious 7 in theaters, there was a family with like six kids in there.
Yeah, it's messed up.
Yeah.
Wow.
So explain MoviePass to me.
Yeah, so it's actually been around. We've talked about it.
We talked about it years ago.
Maybe at least a year ago.
We talked about it in the basement at one point.
I guess it's been around since 2011. Yeah, so a long time ago. It was a really expensive deal. It was a pay a monthly service that you would monthly fee and you get to $30 a month, right?
My cloud is 69, by the way,
out of 100.
Is that what it is?
I think it was Justin Bieber and
Obama. That's my 90 day high. My current is 67.
Oh, that's still pretty good. Someone's gonna have to listen to an old podcast and know what Will's clout was back then.
I need to go engage more.
Back in 2011 when it launched, MoviePass, pay $30 a month, you get an app on your smartphone, mm-hmm. and when you see a movie, you swipe your membership card, and you get to watch as many movies.
Whoa. Well, no, you only get one a day.
One a day, sorry. One movie a day, up to, you know, however many days.
Oh, this is the old deal.
This is the old deal. Yeah.
$30
a month.
A month.
So if you watch three movies a month, you're good.
Yeah, if you watch 30, you're great.
If you watch 30, you got plenty of time in your hands.
Does this work with stuff like IMAX and Alamo Drafthouse?
No. So it's only certain theater chains. But the new deal is, I guess, Mitch Lowe, who's a co-founder of Netflix and president of Redbox. Did you know that? Co-founder of Netflix is the president of Redbox?
That makes sense. He's the disc guy. Remember, they used to have discs at Netflix.
And now it's all Redbox.
I mean, no, they still have discs at Netflix also.
There's a different name now. Down. Yeah. Now it's only $10 a month.
$9.99.
That seems like a pretty good deal.
Dude, it's an impossible, possibly good deal.
So no and 3D, which is the a
CEO
plus.
Has e- the CEO yeah. has even said this is not a
sustainable
this is
deal.
Sustainable business model.
I mean, here's the thing. You can't pre-order tickets. So like
you have to buy it at the door.
You have to buy it at the door. So that means if you want to go see something popular on the first weekend in a big city,
reserve seats,
you're boned.
No reserve seats.
No.
That's
I guess you can get reserved seat tickets if whatever's left over.
Yeah,
right.
But there are a lot of places. We're talking about. We're approaching this from watching movies in major metropolitan cities mm-hmm. with big downtown cineplexes.
Yeah.
But in most of America, there are many theaters in the middle of nowhere, just like off the freeway that people can go to.
You mean in people's towns and
in people's
and cities?
Towns.
Yeah.
And that would be a perfectly great deal.
Well,
to watch movies, just like, to spend your time.
I never saw a full movie theater. In my life until I moved to San Francisco, right? Like I went to see Return of the Jedi in third grade with a school field trip and like there were a million kids there. That theater was full. Like if you just went to like the Friday night at 7 o'clock showing, there were always seats. So yeah, this is good. I think this is a good service. I would pay for this if I didn't have a kid.
If you could sign up for it.
Oh, you can't sign up for it?
Try. The website is inaccessible most
packed.
Of the time. And
yeah.
If you get through to it, like the sign up button doesn't do anything.
So the way the business model works and the way it's really unsustainable is that they don't actually have specific partnerships with theaters. It's like the card, the key you get, the membership card
yeah.
that works like a debit card. And you go to your theater, you swipe your card, and whatever the movie ticket costs, whether it's $14 or $18
yeah.
bucks, that gets MoviePass pays the theater
mm-hmm.
that money. And so you can't opt out. Like if AMC has come out and said, we don't like this. This is shaky. Like if we don't like this. This is not sustainable business. But they can't really opt out unless they stop accepting
debit cards. Yeah.
Or targeting the
so
MoviePass cards.
It's an actual Visa or MasterCard debit card?
I don't know if it's a like what
it works the
is,
same way
but
as
it,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I have a friend who's been using this for years who lives in New York.
No kidding.
Yeah. But I mean, she was using it when it was expensive because she lived next door to a movie theater.
Yeah,
and was just like, now I just if I don't know what I'm going to do tonight, I just go see a movie.
I mean, theater chains. I don't know. Should they be embracing this? Should they be coming out with their own system?
I mean, that seems like the right answer. Like AMC charging you $10 a month for one a day access to extra seats. If you're not selling, remember. Here's the thing to remember. The movie theater makes money on everything else at the movie theater except
yep.
for the movie.
Yep.
So, I mean...
So should yeah. they be embracing this? It
so
gets
why
more
is
people in theaters.
Why is AMC not?
Well, maybe their cost per seat on the... Maybe they're losing money on the seats if they're getting less money per ticket. I don't know. There's also economics concerns about devaluing the consumer's value of the theater experience. Like that's the thing they're probably worried about, which is conceptual and difficult to say, hey, this is a real problem.
Yeah, I wonder about that. But yeah. the movie theater isn't losing money on this deal. Like, cause
they get the full ticket price.
Yeah, they just charge what they want.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds great for the movie theaters. They would love this.
I mean, it seems like if the movie theaters did it, though, then they wouldn't be able to do it that way. It would be that
they're
discounting. I don't know. It's a weird situation.
I don't know. It feels like bubble talk to me. It feels like this is just one of those weird businesses that's going to blow up and burst.
If they start doing that at the chain level, then they like the movie theater knows what the revenue per user is on concessions when they hit the door, and they'll know like basically. Then you're saying we're going to loss lead people in the seats to sell more popcorn and hot dogs.
So they're afraid that it's going to AMC and I guess maybe other big theater chains are afraid that this sets up consumers for disappointment.
Yeah,
because it's not very clear. It's one, it's unsustainable, and two. It's not very clear that people have that expectation that they're paying these $10 a month. It will sour the overall movie-going experience if the illusion is that you're paying $10 a month, as you would a Netflix, to watch unlimited movies, when it's really not the case. Like
yeah.
they should be really clear that these are either for second-run movies or really – you know,
well, it's first-run, but you have to be able to get a seat.
You have to be able to get a seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's absurdly cheap. I would – $20, I would do it.
It seems much more for, hey, let's go see a movie, not, hey, let's go see, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Right. Pay your full price ticket. Book. You know, it's in the what I hope this does is, and not to call it a disruption or anything, but I hope it pushes more movie theaters and chains into setting up e-tickets and reserve seats, which is 100%
yeah.
the standard overseas. Like it
well,
is,
and it's becoming the standard here.
Very slowly. Because of the infrastructure. It's not because of like the It's the all because e-commerce. It's Look, not I'll, because of the, yeah. the physical seats in the
I don't
theaters.
Know. Like AMC has the ability to do it, and they only choose to do it in some theaters.
Well, they have to have numbers and stuff on the seats,
which is a very simple problem to solve.
I mean, well, you say that, but somebody has to come. I mean, they have to put numbers and lights because you have to be able to see the seat numbers and stuff when the lights are off.
Most theaters don't have the lights.
Anyway. The Tan for N has a ton of theaters now that have reserved seating. I think it's just as they refit the theaters, they're putting the numbers and stuff in.
Yeah,
I think they're doing the math, and one of the reasons they didn't want to let people reserve seats is they know they have the data. They know statistically if you allow people to reserve seats on a movie that's maybe not a first run movie, like a must see movie, mm-hmm. then people are less likely to buy tickets. And commit to buying a ticket if they see that it's like 50% full and they don't have a.
Oh, you think so? Them,
yeah.
I also wonder if it's kind of like the,
about that.
Like the iPhone stuff where they would go, like some years they'd let pre-orders and some years they didn't. And it's because they wanted to get the lines. Like they like the coverage of people in line to see something.
I don't know about that.
There is a sense that if you don't let people reserve seats, then it's more egalitarian. Right, like you know, your ticket. You can. There's just as much chance that your $10 can get you the best seat in the house as someone who bought it right before. As long as you get there early and wait in line, you know, it's like for concerts. But I know plenty of times I have just decided, maybe I can watch this movie next week, not this week, because it's mostly booked in reserved seats.
The fact is, the studios and the theaters need to do everything they can to entice people with a better quality of experience. Because right now they're competing with home.
Yeah, and the other thing, psychologically, people are totally okay, still totally okay paying $5 for a soft drink, you know, $6 for a bucket of popcorn,
you just $4 for a candy. Reamed.
That blows my mind. That is an acceptable business model, and culturally we are totally okay with it.
Oh, so
the movie price tickets are going up.
Yeah,
and the food is still expensive, but we're okay because we're getting a shared cultural experience that's still better than maybe watching at home.
I mean, sometimes it's nice to spend 2 hours outside your house and have your kid be quiet and loaded full of hockey.
It's what fills the malls these days.
You know, I don't know. My imagination about going to the theater is always better than the reality. Like, whenever I'm always looking forward to it.
It's not the Coke
to the wrong theater.
You're not sitting on that line. Those kids are singing that Coke song and ba da ba 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 and throwing the popcorn.
Exactly.
That's exactly.
Yeah. And as people, you can hear you're spilling on your laptop. You hear people chewing, you hear people talking and checking their phones, and it's just constant.
It's the checking the phones bit. Thanks, millennials. It's that you can tell if you're sitting like
it's not just millennials.
It's not just millennials. It's mostly old people.
It's also everyone in this room included.
I don't check my phone at the fucking movie theater.
During the trailers. People
not during
do.
The trailers.
People
not
talk during the trailers. Like it's not the movie.
It's not the movie. It's the trailers. What? Next thing you're going to say, you recline your seat on the airplane.
Coming attractions. I like the coming attractions. The thing that makes me the most angry about going to movie theaters
is
after the fact and seeing with the scum of the earth, people who leave their garbage on the floor.
Look, you're creating jobs. You're doing your bit for...
It infuriates me to no end the amount of trash people leave in a movie theater and how crappy people feel like... Yep. They can leave that
room. Well, they paid all that good money.
Yeah. I mean, you pay $25, you should be able to take a crap in there if you want.
That's going to be an outro bit. All right. Other big news this week. I know you're not in the market for Tesla, but you're excited about the Tesla Model 3, Jeremy. I am as well.
Aren't we all?
Are you
still on the list, Norm?
I'm still on the list.
Are you still on the list, Jeremy?
I am, but I'm going to back out. I just want to get my access to that designer tool.
We need to talk about the best way for me to take your spot on the list.
Oh, because I'm a little in front of you, you think?
Because you are definitely a little in front of me.
Why don't you just sell him your spot?
The thing is,
$1,005 by the price of Bitcoin?
By the time they make these cars, they're going to be so close together. You're not that far behind.
Yeah, any bit ahead of the list.
Yeah.
Still have your Bitcoin loan?
No. Oh, we're going to talk about this random tangent.
Did you sell it?
Let's talk about the Tesla first.
Okay.
The fear we have with the Model 3 is the user experience, the UI, because there is no the Model S has that big screen,
yeah,
in the center, 17-inch screen, but it also has a traditional dashboard behind the steering wheel.
Yeah.
And information.
But that's also a screen, right?
Yes, that is also a screen. And screens as dashboards are totally fine. Like, there's no problem with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Most cars, even non-electric cars, have that these days. The Model 3 has nothing, no UI, except for that screen in the middle.
Really? So does it have a heads-up display or something?
No.
No heads-up display.
How do you tell how fast you're going?
You look at the screen in the middle.
You have to look down into the right?
Down into the right.
My opinion on this. My opinion on this is that the car is clearly designed to be autonomous, and you're supposed to be doing anything but looking at the road, and that's why that screen is there for you to engage with the car as you need, but you can direct your entire attention to it. Like, it was designed to be autonomous.
Man, that is not. We are not there yet.
We're just not there yet.
Yeah.
And so there's this interim stage that's going to be awkward.
So not only is there no dash, you know. How do you change the airflow in your car, in any of your cars? You have a new car. You have a Bolt.
I do.
How do you change the airflow?
Very traditional.
You grab
you
the fins.
You grab the fins and you direct it.
Yes. Yeah. You like.
So this one, you say, Alexa, aim the air at the driver.
It's basically that. You have to. There are no fins.
What?
It's the Model 3. Gigantic vent along the front.
So it's like a Dyson.
Yeah, it's like a Dyson.
And on the UI, on screen, you drag. On screen, there's a video. I guess one of the early Model 3 backers and owners tweeted this. Bill Lee on Twitter showed you press the fan button, and then you drag on these four quadrants where you want the air to be best directed at, or two spots if you want dual climating, and that's where the air will be.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
Are you making puns now?
That's what I do. Okay, we've talked about this before in the context of cars. I remain unconvinced. I haven't spent a lot of time driving Teslas or any time driving Teslas. I remain unconvinced by non-tactile interfaces in a context where you need to keep your eyes on the road.
100%. Yeah. I completely agree. And I guess the point is that maybe they've designed this so you don't need to keep your eyes on the road in the future.
Full disclosure, Mini Coopers have a big console in the center. I think newer ones have one behind the wheel.
Yep.
But the early versions did not. It was just all, everything was right in the middle.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So like that, this isn't unprecedented.
And I was thinking, you know, there are third party companies that sell heads up display things that pop up on the windshield. Yeah. So if you want your speedometer that way, you could buy an attachment
Nav-D
for that.
Is one of them, yep. I think.
But with the Mini Cooper, your speedometer was there, but all of the tactile controls for radio and AC and everything, you could reach out and feel them.
Yeah.
You didn't have to take your eyes off
That's
the road.
Exactly it. I don't know. I had to drive to LA a few weeks ago, and I rented a Hyundai or something that had that the lane guidance stuff, and found it to be maddening when you were driving.
What was it? What was the lane guidance stuff?
So it kept you in the lines of the road. So theoretically, if you needed a second to look down at the thing.
Yeah.
But the problem was it didn't actually – the sensors that detected when people were in your blind spots got dirty after about 45 minutes on the road. So you had to get out and wipe them off the next time you put gas in the car. So that meant that lane checking thing would give a buzz that said, hey, this isn't on. You have to actually look. Every time you put the turn signal on to switch lanes. And if the tracking got confused about where you were in the lane, it would start shaking the car wheel and then would start steering you back, and you'd have to fight against it. So it was exhausting.
That's weird.
It was not great. I wasn't super impressed. I mean, of course, this was not the Tesla implementation, which is probably the best in the business.
But right.
Anyway.
It wasn't like an autopilot. It was just an assistant.
Well, it would keep it in the lane for you.
Could you let go of the wheel?
You could let go of the wheel, and it would put it back in the lane, and then it would start buzzing because you let go of the wheel.
There's a lot of bad UI in cars.
I mean, yeah.
And a lot of it, it's definitely tested because they have to go through a development period before they release the UIs. But even within like one brand of car, year over year, like let's use the Lexus, for example, right? I've rented cars from them. My 11-year-old one has a touchscreen.
Uh-huh.
And it's a
resistive
touchscreen. Yeah. Works fine for me. I touch the screen. I can use the GPS or whatever. And then they move. Did you ever use these? The ones that have the mouse, the puck.
Yeah, is it the
like
BMW?
The BMW does that.
The BMW.
Gary's car has that. Yeah.
Or it's like it's like a knob.
It's like a 5-way D-pad with a knob
that has haptic feedback.
Yeah.
And it's still associated with the screen, and it has a little mouse cursor that you're literally dragging around. And it snaps to buttons.
Oh, so the ones that I've used, like the one in the i3, was a 5-way D-pad that had the you could twist the knob on. to scroll through things.
Lexus didn't have
that. Was great.
They didn't have the twist. It was just like a five-way.
Yeah, the twist is important.
That was corresponding to.
Having to like Destiny game your cursor around is bad news
while driving.
Yeah,
totally bad news. And now they've moved to touchpads, like literally a touchpad beneath your stick, where you put your finger on, as opposed to touching the screen because they want to raise the screen.
But as an alternative to touching the screen, you can still touch the screen. That's still unintuitive.
So unintuitive.
I mean, so here's the thing: like if you look at companies that are good at user experience and user interface design, like there's probably four in the world that are actually great at it. And like we complain about Microsoft, I complain about Android sometimes. Those guys are top. Are amazing gods of design compared to the people that design cars, consumer electronics, microwave ovens, all house goods, all of that stuff. Like we're desperately in need of somebody to do human interface guidelines like Apple did with the original Macs back in the day for cars. Like it's just not those experiences aren't great.
But is this a short-term problem? I mean, if the Tesla is designed to be a self-driving car, and as Elon says, all cars will be within 20 years?
I think he's probably right.
Then what's the point?
I mean, I, for one, welcome the self-driving future.
Yeah, this is a short-term problem, even if, you know, it doesn't get solved.
We're in that weird interim period where the cars are transitioning over and...
Dumb.
And they have to make these design conceits or find design solutions to design problems that don't exist. Yeah. Not a fan. A little worried about that. To go back to your tangent, yes, I did sell my Bitcoin.
I'm sorry. How are you feeling about that?
Not great.
He did great.
I made $400. That's $450.
Okay. What would you have made if you'd kept it now?
Oh, boy.
$3,000.
And change. Yeah.
$600. No, yeah. Probably $4,000. I would have gotten Bitcoin Cash, too, which it also is hovering about $400.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would have repaired enough money to repair my car or put a down payment on a new one.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't realize it was quite that much, or I wouldn't have brought it up.
It was a lot of money.
Wow.
I didn't lose any money.
That's true.
Didn't lose any money.
It looked like you were going to lose it all for a little bit there.
Yeah. At some point, I was seriously thinking about trading a Newegg had an offer, sell your Bitcoin and get a PS4.
That's a pretty good deal.
That was a good deal when Bitcoin was under $300.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Newegg's really happy with all this Bitcoin.
I was going to have to expense the money that I gave you to buy your Bitcoin at one point.
Oh, I gave you money back.
You eventually.
I can get cash almost immediately back.
It took a while.
No, you got it.
Did he give you a percentage cut?
No.
You should have kept that. You should have kept part of that Bitcoin.
I didn't take an investment share.
Okay. No.
I just loaned money.
Yeah. So
I did drink a lot of beer though.
There was a lot of beer that weekend. So Consumer Reports. Do you guys still use Consumer Reports, or do you guys use Wirecutter?
Wirecutter.
What's Consumer Reports again?
Well, before the Wirecutter, they were the most trusted technology and consumer report review site.
I think the mass market still considers them.
Yeah, totally. They still have a good reputation, and I think a lot of companies still hold their reputations in high regard.
My grandfather always used them when he needed to buy a washing machine.
So they recently removed a recommended rating for Microsoft Surface laptops and tablets.
Is that the Book or the Pro or both?
See, that's where some of the ambiguity comes in. It's across all of the Surface laptops and tablets.
RT?
Not RT. Last few generations.
Okay.
Ones you can buy today in stores.
Okay.
Because they did a survey, and of the 90,000 users they surveyed, 25% of the users, which is a significant amount, reported issues with reliability, freezing, what? And shutdowns within the first couple years.
I think that's
years
just Windows 10, isn't it?
That's... I think that's part of it.
That's stupid. Yeah.
So Microsoft clearly does not agree with us.
Consumer Reports did this survey?
Yeah.
They do a lot of surveys.
That's cool.
That's the thing that Wirecutter doesn't do that Consumer Reports does, is they survey tens of thousands of people who buy stuff.
So Microsoft issued a statement, and then they also released an internal memo that Paul Theroux was able to get a hold of. And it did – I think it acknowledged they had some quality issues initially with the launch of the Surface Book and Surface Pro 4. And I think anyone who's owned a Surface Book, first generation Surface Book, noticed that over time, like, they had some driver issues with the detachment of the lid and the
keyboard. I mean, Windows 10 just in general has problems when you disconnect a GPU.
But here's the problem. Guess who makes Windows 10? Also Microsoft.
I mean,
they make the hardware, they make software. Theoretically, the people that make, if the whole purpose of Surface is to be the best hardware to represent their software, it should work seamlessly.
Yeah, they can't complain that somebody used a shitty network stack or network chip or something like that with the machine that they make.
They also blame Intel, and some of the issues perhaps were with the Skylake and adopting those chips and the drivers, and Windows 10 working perfectly with that. But I don't think that was really it. I mean, Skylake and then the previous processors, they're all similar enough. If the drivers work in the past chips, they should have worked with these chips.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, if you make the hardware and you make the software, you have to say, look, we fucked this up. Or alternately, they could say this is a faulty survey and it leans too heavily on certain customers who, well, you know, whatever.
There's a lag. I think the problem is a lag because Microsoft is saying that it's all fixed.
Of course they're saying
so
it's all fixed.
They're saying that over – I mean, I think they have to be really – smart about how they message that, right? Like, if they're going to acknowledge that the people had issues, then they're acknowledging that they launched with faulty products. But then they're also doubling down on the fact that things are fixed. And I think for a lot of users, if you browse the forums, some people still have issues with these computers going to sleep. Just like unpredictable behavior.
I mean, look, the unpredictable behavior describes my experience with Windows 10, right? I use it every day. It's fine. But I always turn off my laptops now when I put them in a bag instead of putting them to sleep because I don't like to wake up to the 90-degree laptop and a dead battery, right? Or 150-degree laptop and a dead battery.
Yeah, and just anecdotally, the issues I've had, like, I think no one likes having updates, surprise updates on your desktop machine, especially if you run your desktop machine overnight. Well, and you wake up the next morning and it's doing it's rebooted.
Don't worry, your data's okay. It's safe.
Yeah. I think also some of the design, because they're putting chips that, yes, they run at low power, low wattage, but they can ramp up. A lot of that heat management is put behind the screens. They're putting a lot of this stuff, especially in the Surface Books, where it's these Core i7s on a big screen on a really thin computer, and the keyboard is really just the battery. The heat issues can cause these computers to lock up, and I've definitely had the mouse lock up and the touchscreen lock up from time to time.
I've had, even on like a Razer Blade, I've had problems when you plug in the external GPU. If you sometimes when you unplug it, it just blue screens the whole machine for no apparent reason, right? It's like Windows is twitchy about hardware being like key components being removed and added on the fly. So, like I don't doubt any of this. I think that this is the experience of modern Windows, unfortunately.
I also don't think the Consumer Reports were completely transparent about the way they conducted the surveys. 90,000 users of, like, I don't think there are 90,000 users of Surface Pro 5 that you can get access to unless you're Microsoft at any time. So it's like they need to delineate between which of the users, what machines they had, if they wanted to say, to blanket say, not recommend this brand of laptop as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't recommend anyone buying like a 2-year-old laptop and using old drivers, right? You'd want to buy the newest one, use the latest drivers, or last year's laptop and use the latest drivers.
But one of the things, and a lot of like the Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4 had high early returns because they had some problems right out of the gate. I think
that's also a marketing issue. I think returns could also be due to mismatched expectations. You sell a product as a tablet, mm-hmm. and what you're getting is a laptop that you have to buy an optional keyboard for. Of course, people are going to be a little disappointed, but yeah. If you sell it as the thing it actually is good for, then yeah, you're not buying an iPad.
Maybe it works itself out.
Will, you have a smart home.
I do. My home is smart.
Except you have avoided the smart lock. Am I correct?
I do not like the smart lock because of this reason. Alexa, unlock the front door.
What's wrong with that? That sounds very convenient.
My front door and my Alexa are too close to each other to use that safely.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well,
because you can stand outside the door and say, Alexa, unlock my front door, and your front door will unlock.
If you were to choose a smart lock, you might have gone with a smart lock by a company named LockState.
Old LockState. Yeah.
No, they're highly recommended. Yeah. In fact,
Airbnb recommends
Airbnb
them, right?
Airbnb does, in fact, recommend them. Well, last week they launched the like we're talking about with Windows. An auto update for their lock system.
Uh-oh.
Only they sent the wrong version.
What I need. Locks my house to auto update.
Yeah, exactly. They sent the 7000 series update to the 6000 series.
You know what you should send the story to? That Internet of Shit Twitter account.
Well,
I bet that guy is all over this.
unfortunately, that bricked the connection to the internet. And so what a lot of people, especially on Airbnb, were using these locks for was to assign one-time passcodes to, you know, current residents so that they could get in the house. Unfortunately, with the internet connection broken, that was impossible.
Not so much, huh?
So the physical key still works.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah. I mean, as it always would. But, yeah. And it's not as bad as, like, you know, publishing your code to the internet, but it was a bad news story, bad news day.
For the record, Microsoft did it much better with the Creators Update about forcing people to upgrade immediately. Because, like, I just installed the Creators Update on my last machine last week, and it wasn't nagging me. It just said, hey, by the way, we have this. It's available for you if you want it.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be, I think.
Yeah, I think all those updates should be that.
I don't. So what are they doing to fix these locks? Do you have to send it back, or can you, like, plug it into a micro USB thing or something?
No, that would be great.
Oh, boy.
No, you have two options. One, you can send your lock back. That's
not great.
I don't want locks with micro USB ports on them, for the record.
Well, if it's on the inside, it's okay.
It leaves your door, you know, without a lock on it.
It
seems a little
I don't want to judge here.
Or you can wait for them to send you a new lock. And then you swap them out.
The fact they weren't overnighting locks to people.
Yeah.
Or getting them codes that they could download and buy one immediately for free from Best Buy or Target.
Can you just Martian that and, like, type in the new source code, like a microcode on the keypad and like just...
Oh, like in binary?
Just like binary. Just 1-1-0-0-1-0-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1- Yeah, yeah. Wow, that sucks.
Yeah, it does suck.
Yeah,
poor guys. I mean, jeez. And who? God, who? How did this happen?
Kids, this is why you do. This is why if you have a massive company, if you have a company that's selling hardware like this, then you don't stage your updates and test them on
exactly
real machines. Then this is going to happen to you, and it will destroy your company.
Like
that sucks.
We've all worked in tech at some level. I mean, I've made mistakes that could have been horrible,
always staged.
But there's always like a firewall that gets passed through, and
yeah.
It's too bad.
If it works fine, look, sometimes you do stuff and it doesn't work on the staging server, and I'm sure they'll do a postmortem that explains exactly how they fucked this up. But like the vast majority of times that we've made mistakes that would have destroyed us, we caught them on the staging server.
Yeah. Okay, it's August 17th. We're probably 1 month away from the announcement of a new iPhone is my expectation.
Three weeks, maybe.
Everyone keeps talking about this iPhone 8.
You know, there are people who build a version of the phone based on what they think. Like, you can buy...
Is it on Thingiverse?
They actually have, milled parts.
Like KSWs?
It looks really, really nice, like it's in terms of a mock-up. This is much fun. We used to 3D print, for size, see if it fits in your pocket.
Yeah.
I think that's still a great idea. But they have now just to see the steel exterior and the band or whatever. But no one knows how the fingerprint's going to stuff is going to work with this new screen. But the event that they're going to have in September, because we all expect an event, is going to be more, I think, than about just a new iPhone. We'll probably talk about HomePod, and they may even talk about content. This is the big question: is Apple TV? Is it still a hobby for them, or is this a real business for them?
I thought it's not a hobby now that there's apps on it, right?
I think it's still a hobby.
So I think the apps were a stopgap solution for them because it was a failed measure for them to control the content. And we talk about how if they had bought Netflix back when Netflix was cheap, and they probably would have run it differently, run the content deals differently. But that's the position they probably wanted to be in.
I'd like them to buy Netflix and put Dre in charge.
Or
Jimmy Iovine.
Jimmy Iovine.
Dude, by the way, I watched that whole 4-part documentary about them.
Really?
The Defiant Ones.
It's good.
I watched it on the train. It's great. Like that, I had no idea about Jimmy Iovine. I now think he should be the next CEO of Apple.
What do you watch? What did you do with your free time? Did you play some games? You watch some movies? You watch some documentaries?
Yeah. That's
TV?
Basically it. That's basically it. Yeah.
Take the Switch?
There's a game called Rider on iPhone that I played a hell of a lot of.
Okay.
A little light cycle game.
That sounds good.
So for a company that has over $250 billion in cash, not in stock, just in cash.
That's a lot of billion. That's a lot of zeros.
A lot of zeros
in
cash.
A lot of cheddar.
It looks like from some reports they're going to spend about a 250th of that, a billion, on some original content that they might distribute on their Apple TV.
That's amazing.
Presumably that's money that they'll get back when they start a subscription service or start selling stuff.
There are a lot of subscription models out there, and it's maybe one of the reasons that iTunes kind of sucks because they don't want people to buy things a la carte anymore. They want people to not own the content and just rent licenses.
Well, they're month to month. They bundle their current. They do two shows already, right? This singing, Karaoke in Cars.
Carpool Karaoke.
Yeah, that's James Marsden. And Planet of the Apes. And they're both Planet
of the Apes. It's different.
They're both bundled with Apple Music. So I assume that everything going forward is going to be the same thing.
So this is their the reverse Amazon move. Amazon got you your Prime subscription, right? They got you in with 3-day shipping, and then they start raising the price for that, and then they snuck in your streaming music, your Amazon Music. They snuck in your Amazon Prime Video as a way to compete with Netflix, which charges you month to month, and they are going to probably increase their prices as well in the near future. With Apple is the other way, get you with music because they have the quote unquote best music solution that they believe, and then start feeding in video and then feeding in. I mean, they also have a upgrade program for phones, right? People are now leasing their phones essentially from Apple.
Well, no, that's all run through a third party bank.
It's not through with care.
They are not doing the financing. Citizens United or something like that.
Well, it's not Citizens United.
I can't remember what it is, but that's all external. I wonder if they might do it the other way. What if they create some original content and then give you like X amount of credits to spend in the iTunes movie and TV store every month? Right, like you get one series a month or something.
Yeah, what's the business model?
They could completely flip it. They have both sides of the channel, potentially.
Is it a hardware play? Only people with Apple TV can watch this stuff.
No, because people want to watch on their phones and movies. All this works. Like Netflix and Hulu and all that stuff work because I can watch my phone and
it's hardware locked. Like Safari on iPhones.
Yeah, it's ecosystem locked.
I assume. Well, no, because Apple Music's on Android. There's an Apple Music app for Android.
And you could watch. Could you watch? It's like streaming Apple Keynotes with Safari on Windows.
But
you can now do that on Edge.
If they're going to make a platform for content, they're going to make it open for everybody.
So it has to be subscription.
I think it's Apple Music.
You think it's Apple Music and they just added another $10 to it and you get TV too?
Or not. And they just want, like with Prime, they just keep putting stuff in it. It's not. It's like a sixth of what Netflix is going to spend this year.
A million people at $10 a month.
But most of Netflix, what they do is most of that $6 billion for content is in licensing.
Not anymore.
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Still, yeah. Yeah, there's
so much original content now.
Yes, but the interview that Variety did with Ted, I forget his last name.
Kaczynski?
No, the head of content at Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
he said that. So you know Ted Sarandos, they are going to spend $7 billion I think next year on content. They did $6 billion this year, and there are reports that they are in debt $20 billion, but most of that is in licensing obligations that they've already signed deals for in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Still more than half of that $7 billion is for licensing.
Okay,
that's a lot of billions.
Well,
they're still spending
original content,
but they've been doing it for forever, right? They have the partnership. They've been signing creators. They bought a comic book company, so they have an infrastructure built in.
They also crank content way faster than most traditional networks. Like they'll do two seasons of a thing a year if it's doing well for them.
Like, what is HBO's content budget?
A couple $1 billion, probably.
I just know that they've been reported to spend $10 million an episode on Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
and that's their most expensive show.
I would guess so.
I bet Westworld's more expensive now.
Well, let's do some napkin math, right? Yeah. Like if they do $10 million episode for Netflix or for Game of Thrones and Westworld, and let's say they're at its peak ten episodes each.
That's a fifth of $1 billion.
That's $200 million.
Yeah,
but they don't do 10 of those shows a year. They do. Maybe roughly.
They do a lot of other. I mean, they pay for all those comedy specials. They pay
not hundreds of millions.
But they have like Jerry Seinfeld, Louis C.K., and stuff like that. That's not cheap.
Netflix now.
Oh, really?
Netflix paid $50 million.
Oops.
For that stuff.
Well, there you go. So now we know what that costs.
Yep. That was on the very, very high end.
I mean, yeah. If you want to steal them.
But my point is that if Apple's just saying that they want to spend $1 billion, they want to make 10 $100 million shows, 10 House of Cards, 10 Game of Thrones shows. You can't just flip a switch and say, we're going to have 10 of these shows.
There's not that much capacity in the world to make those kinds
of
shows.
Creative capacity, like production capacity.
Getting crews and VFXs and costumes and all that stuff built for those kinds of big period shows is really expensive and time consuming.
You want to buy a podcast?
We do 2 weeks, 2 hours of content a week. It's good stuff. There's a lot of concern from people that I know that the TV is a bubble right now.
Peak TV?
That we are producing way much more really high quality TV than it's possible for people to watch.
Supply and demand will fix that.
Yeah, and in fixing that, it'll wipe out entire networks probably, which is, I mean, that's the way things go. But we could see another crash, and then the rise of the cheap reality TV will come back, and we'll be back right back in 2001 again.
Well, maybe they should invest in platforms for things that are not just video, maybe audio. SoundCloud, between recording last week, SoundCloud died and then came back.
SoundCloud what? Died? I didn't hear about that.
Well, they were going to go. They were on their last legs. They did not have the funding to continue. And they were saved at the last minute with a huge investment of $170 million. And they will continue operating.
So that basically you're saying a Game of Thrones and Three Quarters of a Westworld saved SoundCloud.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. To go back to that estimate of how much that stuff costs.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Why is it so necessary for SoundCloud to survive?
I think it's one of those services that people take for granted now.
A lot of podcasts are hosted on SoundCloud. Yeah. A lot of indie music comes up on SoundCloud.
No, I'm not saying it was a bad service. It was beautiful. I love their waveform. I love you could see things. I love the comment system. I just wonder if it's kind of like the audio industry where it's like, well, I mean, if it was naturally not going to make it, why?
But it was a YouTube for audio. It was an easy way for people to upload audio and share it.
Like YouTube wouldn't still exist if Google hadn't bought it when Google bought YouTube because it was unsustainable. Yeah.
But they did find a way to monetize it. I wonder if SoundCloud will figure that out.
That's what this investment's about, I think. Well, it's about figuring out. They did a subscription model.
And they got a new CEO along with the investment, right? The new CEO is from Vimeo, I think.
But yeah, they already had laid off 40% of its workforce last month because they were spending too much money and not sustainable. I mean, it's the case with a lot of startups, right? They offer free services, and if you can't find the business model that's going to work, but you build the user base, that user base isn't necessarily going to sustain it because sometimes people aren't willing to pay.
Well, Snapchat's in a similar situation. They're spending a ton of money right now.
How many Snapchat spectacles do you think they sold?
45,000.
About 43,000.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's pretty close.
I think I probably saw a headline last week, and it popped up in the back of my mind. They basically, like, they're spending a ton of money to acquire users, and they're not acquiring users anymore. So they're in a similar, like, they're probably still making money on the users that exist, but with a lot of these services, especially if you're venture funded, if you aren't continuing to grow your user base at a phenomenal rate, you've got problems.
Which is ridiculous because I think it's more important to make money. I mean, I'm not a entrepreneur, but I don't know, like, from VC's perspective, is it about just getting free users signing up, or is it about actually active users and people paying users?
Well, okay, so there's always attrition in terms of users, like the amount of time the new users coming in versus the old users coming out. You always want to have more new users coming in than you have old users going out, right? But you don't want to spend a ton of money to capture those new users, and you don't want to because there's a total amount of money you're going to be able to extract from them, either in terms of personal purchases or advertising revenue or whatever. And if the amount of money you're spending to acquire a user is more than the amount of money that you're going to get out of that user, then you're not. That's not good. That's not good for your business. So it's a weird. It's a weird way to run a business, though, right? Like this is the modern post social networking kind of big service, big free service, and it's challenging.
Speaking of Snapchat, I'm assuming you guys are big Snapchat users.
Man, I snap all day, every day.
So many filters.
I got all those PUBG snaps. Faces. We do a lot of the filters are popular with my kids.
Yeah, putting some rabbit ears or kitten ears on your face.
Stick your tongue out. The puppy tongue comes out.
It's good computer.
Game of Thrones, Ice Walker. She really liked that one. That was great.
The algorithms to better do facial recognition and to better to do computer vision. Snapchat unveiled a new feature this past weekend to coincide with the Outside Lands Music Festival that's happening in San Francisco. It's a feature called CrowdSurf, and I thought it was interesting because it reminded me of the PhotoSynth software that Microsoft experimented in way back, like over 10 years ago. That was based on, I think, Sea Dragon was the name of the technology.
You're talking about when they could take a bunch of pictures taken randomly by different people of the same area
and create a point cloud.
Sort of create a cloud, a 3D space.
Yes.
They did it with one of Obama's inaugurations, I think.
It was basically a photogrammetry crowdsourced photogrammetry, right? Back before computing was really cheap.
Tons and tons of different cameras. It worked with different cameras from different perspectives and could kind of figure it out.
Well, what Snapchat has, because people are Snapchatting all the time, especially at live events where people are recording like very similar things, such as like a musician on stage, they're taking that same tech to video by synchronizing the audio. So they're taking the audio forms, matching them up.
What?
And then what they're doing is they're allowing you to play back and switch in real time between different video feeds.
Wow.
So it's like a huge polyphonic audio like capture. Wow, that's really bizarre.
So it's I guess there was a string that syncs up all the Snapchat feeds from that sequence, and as long as it can fill up all the holes, if one person records the entire time, that's great. But then you can switch between the different views.
That is really cool.
Actually, really cool.
Yeah.
And I assume you get the audio from each of the different views.
Yes. But which was hopefully temporarily they're synced up, but the quality may not be the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Because some people might be yelling in front of the camera. You might hear ambient. But it's a way of navigating space.
I was going to say it's a live version of that Beastie Boys thing that they shot, where they just hit a bunch of video cameras, like cheap camcorders, in the venue.
They didn't hide them. They gave them to people.
They gave them to people in the line?
They bought them from Best Buy, and they handed them out, and they shot the show randomly from different perspectives.
Oh, man.
And then they returned them to Best Buy.
Yeah. The cameras?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, but the people gave them the tapes, and and then it's a documentary called "Yo, I freaking shot that" or something.
Yeah, good memory.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of metadata here.
It's
right?
A good MCA idea.
When people are using Snapchat, one, you already have the timestamp in the app,
and the geolocation too.
Right? Location, the time, and now you have the audio, which can help sync things up perfectly.
Do you think they're cheating and using real audio, like clean audio off the board?
So this is not going to be for every – you can't just like – the three of us can't just record three different perspectives of one thing. It's going to be only used right now for events,
like concerts. Events,
outdoor concerts, things like speeches, things where people – they know, one, a lot of Snapchat users, two, less people are using the Snapchat stories. And it's to encourage people to, one, record more, and two, then to view it back on their phones within that app.
They've got the GPS data too, so they can see that, who's near each other.
I wonder if they have beacons set up too, so they know exactly where.
I don't think they need it.
Probably not.
I mean, I think
that's really interesting.
So what's the deal? Like, do you just hit play on a prefab video, or do you actually have control over what perspectives you're looking at?
That's the thing. I think in the app, you could press the button to switch between perspectives.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So OpenAI.
Yeah. Let's go back to the international.
Yeah, back to the internet. It's my favorite game, Dota 2.
Have you ever played it?
Once.
Okay. So
Didn't stick.
You know what OpenAI is?
It's artificial intelligence platform that's open source.
More or less. It's Elon Musk's OpenAI venture.
Okay.
And it's a small group. It's like 10 people.
Doesn't have a cool name like the Boring Company or something like that?
No, it's different.
Oh.
But it is, you know, Elon's very wary of AI or leery of AI. And he's concerned that it's going to take over the world. And he said, you know, AI is something we all need to be aware of and think deeply about. And my AI company will share all of our information with you. And that's why it's called OpenAI. Well, one of their projects that they've worked on is a AI for Dota.
It's the easiest way to kill all the humans.
Dota 2.
So Dota 2.
In fact, their AI has now killed probably more humans than AlphaGo.
We're the creeps, is what you're saying.
they took their OpenAI to the championship.
To the international,
what, like a week ago, and they played. They made a big event out of it. Where like
this is when they played Crispy. No, not Crispy. Dandy.
Dandy came out in a boxing outfit.
And it's Dandy.
Dandy. And the crowd went wild. And then they said,
it's a crowd favorite Dota player.
And this is normally Dota is 5v5. This is a 1v1 match, so
which
it's kind of
already
unique.
Breaks the
absolutely.
The
no, we can't have five Dendies.
No, but stick with it for a second because it's baby steps, right? So it's 1v1.
It's a completely different game.
And they turn off all these options that Dota players usually play with.
That's not even Dota.
It's not an
exhibition match. This is like when Garry Kasparov played the computer.
It's like you couldn't use special abilities.
It's not right because like that was pure chess. You could
exhibition.
Anything goes.
Exhibition. Early access.
The rules were heavily favored to limitations of
absolutely,
the AI system.
Absolutely. So yeah, this is not like the AI can do anything, but the AI won two games in a row,
decisively.
And everyone was stunned because all the bots that ship with the game are, you know,
bad.
Incompetent.
Yeah,
And well, to be fair, he even said on stage he's lost to bots before. Like,
I think he was being modest.
Oh.
I mean, because everyone else that it tested with, they all basically said, yeah, of course, bots. I might play with a bot to warm up, but it's not a, you know, it's not a challenge.
Right.
But it was interesting because they said that then they brought out the two of the developers and they said that it taught itself to play. They didn't teach it the rules. They just threw it in the game and they just had played games against itself.
For thousands of cycles?
Lifetime. They said lifetimes. They said lifetimes. So
every lifetime is a game.
It seems to me that they have the ability to speed up the game. Because there's no way that you can get a lifetime. And what they ended up saying was 2 weeks.
But I mean, there's no reason. The game's just math. Like, that is...
But they said within like an hour or not long, it could beat the in-game bots all on its own just by learning how to play. But then it took 2 weeks before it could actually beat a player.
Highlander, that
one of the pro players.
Do you think that Elon, when he sets up these AI machines, like he has mandated that there's a guillotine on the power so they can just cut it at any moment?
Wouldn't surprise me. The guy sounds pretty paranoid.
About AI specifically. And he's funding.
In a good way.
You got to put a fire axe by all your AI rigs. That's what I say.
I don't deny that it was impressive in terms of the way it learned, machine learning.
Yeah.
But the way it was presented was grossly over-glamorized and blew out of proportion the significance of the Dota playing abilities.
Did you see the thing that the oncologist wrote last week about the IBM Watson for cancer ads?
No.
So basically an oncologist, it's the same situation where it's presented in a really weird way. There are ads that talk about using Watson to diagnose different kinds of cancer and stuff like that. And they're presented in a way that is not realistic for today's uses of that technology. So the oncologist has at those hospitals have people coming to them saying, hey, can this computer help me get better? And it puts them in an awful position because, you know, these ads give people hope. Something that they're all familiar with, and it's the work that they're doing with the computers is years off, is my understanding. So
yeah, that's dangerous territory.
Yeah, not good.
But beating people at Dota 2?
I mean, I'm fine with that.
Big thumbs up.
I think any look, can you make a bot that makes you able to play Dota 2 without somebody yelling at you for feeding? That's
exactly,
what I want to know.
Exactly. Yeah, they said by next year they plan to have 5v5 working. Hopefully they can remove those other checks too.
When it beat him, did it call him a fucking noob and told him to fuck off and die or never play again?
Next year.
Okay.
It'll learn itself to do that after just another couple of weeks of scraping the internet.
I mean, I have to imagine if it plays enough games with people, eventually it'll learn all sorts of interesting language.
It was cool. I mean, it's not, unlike AlphaGo, it's not like very clear linear. I don't mean to belittle AlphaGo in any way, shape, or form. But
yeah,
there's
that
just
garbage
a lot,
Go computer.
There's just a lot of like analog weird stuff about the actual live, real-time aspect of Dota 2. Like, you keep your creeps behind you in a way that didn't seem like it was designed to be that way. Like, players just learned to do this.
Is it interfacing with a mouse and keyboard? Or does it have like an API-level interface to the game?
There is no human avatar. There is no robot avatar.
The mouse
keyboard is directly tied into the game.
But presumably it's like plugged into a USB to USB thing, and it's mimicking the mouse and keyboard interface.
I don't know. No, I think it's coded into
that
version.
It has API access. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a special version of Dota.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Well, I don't know when the last time you followed Intel CPU news is.
It's something about a lake.
Let's see if you could... let's go back and
Broad
see if you
Lake.
Can name all the Intel chipsets you remember, the core chipsets. Let's start with the core ones. Let's start with Nehalem.
Nehalem, Broadwell, Sandy Bridge, Ivy Bridge.
Sandy Bridge, Ivy Bridge,
Broadwell.
Good.
Haswell, Broadwell, Skylake.
Very good.
Ice Lake.
Nope, we're at Kaby Lake now.
Kaby Lake
is seventh generation.
Kaby Lake.
Seventh generation.
They're just making up words now.
Well, it's all lakes now. Sky Lake.
I liked it better when it was
then
Wells.
Kaby Lake. Right. And Sky Lake, Kaby Lake, both 14 nanometer.
Okay.
Down to 14. Moore's Law is kind of slowed down. We're not doing like...
we're X-ray crystallography or something now. Lithography.
Yeah, reductions. 10 nanometers, next one. Cannon Lake. Coffee Lake is the next one.
K-O-F-Y?
Coffee, Coffee Lake.
Like their Saturday morning monster
show. Also 14 nanometers.
Dance party.
First 10 nanometer will be Cannon Lake and then Ice Lake. It's going to be like six lake processors.
Are they still doing ticks and talks?
They're like three things. What's the thing after a talk? There's three things.
Tick-tock-tack?
I think it's three per...
Tick-tock-toe?
Three for die size.
Tic-tac-toe?
Three for process size. Yeah.
I don't even know anymore.
Jeremy's already brought out there.
Jeremy had to get Advil out. This is also off the rails.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to be back, guys.
Ice Lake is the name, is going to be coming out in 2 years after both Cannon Lake and Coffee Lake. Coffee Lake is the one that's expected to come out this year, end of this year, and then at CES. And it's going to be aggressive, 10 nanometers. Although Damn. It's all about cores now, right?
Yeah.
You want to get your 18 core CPU for $1,000.
Oh, still that 10 nanometers is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Very small.
I know. Couple last things in tech. Anyone here use Google Home?
Nope.
Kishore uses Google Home. Now you can soon he'll be able to make phone calls with Google Home.
It only shows a phone number if you use Google Fi or Google Voice, though.
That's right. It would be unlisted if you, and it's only one directional phone call. You can't receive the same call that way. You just make outgoing calls.
That's the first digital assistant you can make regular phone calls with, right?
Regular phone calls, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is digital assistant the name of this category?
I don't know. I call it that. What do you call it? Amazon Echo.
I just called it an Alexa.
Yeah.
Digital assistant.
Okay.
Cortana can't make phone calls. Cortana can make Skype calls.
I mean, I get so many spam calls now from people in my same exchange that I would have complained about this being an addition to spam calls, but I don't think it's going to make any difference. What's up with the Pixel 2? I like my Pixel 1.
Yeah, so apparently the Pixel 2 HTC did a filing with the FCC, and it may be the Pixel 2 revealed. So,
really?
It was supposed to be, people thought it was going to be manufactured by LG based on some pictures that had come out.
Or
but
maybe Huawei, right? Was one of the other rumors?
Mm-hmm. But now it looks like it's going to be an HTC phone running Android 8.0.1.
Is that orangutan? N?
No, Nougat past, was last we're year. Past Nougat, so O. I don't know what... Oreo.
Is it really Oreo? They did Kit Kat, so I guess nothing's off the table.
Yeah, no, it's Android... It's Oreo. Or no, it's
TBD.
TBD. It might be Oreo.
Orangina?
Orange juice?
Do you guys
orange
think
sherbet?
We just cover phones out of habit? Because 10 years ago, they were drop-dead amazing. Like, the
really
greatest
important.
Thing ever.
Yeah.
And now we just cover them because...
I don't cover them at all anymore.
It's going to feel like we
it's
have
been
to.
It's a really nice change in my life.
It's about the technologies they're putting in their phones and how they may apply elsewhere. So, like, things like ARKit.
Yeah.
I think are super interesting.
Yep.
But the phones themselves, the formats are pretty locked in. And the upgrades to the OSs, incremental.
I do a talk sometimes about how if you look at what... like, there's something interesting about these devices that they're making 200, 300 million of a year in many cases, which basically says, hey, if they're putting a new piece of hardware in one of these phones and it's something that didn't exist before, was expensive before, and when I say expensive, I mean a buck, two, $3 a chip, maybe even 20 cents a chip. When you look at like what happens when the economies of scale kick in on a phone level... then all of a sudden you can like look 3 years in the future and see. Like if you were looking in 2008 when they started adding accelerometers to the iPhone and gyroscopes to the iPhone with the iPhone 4, you suddenly realize, oh, right, this is going to open up a whole world of possibilities in real space with drone controllers and stuff like that.
Because
like the DJI and the 3D robotics and all the rise of drones wouldn't have happened if it weren't for cheap silicon-based accelerometers, gyroscopes, and compasses.
Yeah, not to mention VR headsets.
Yeah, VR headsets are the same thing. And 3D printers came from routers, right? You know, millions and millions of routers are sold a year, and those are all driven by these low cost ARM controllers and stuff like that. It's like you can, like, that's why phones are interesting at this point.
I don't see too much new hardware being implemented.
Well, they're putting like barometric pressure sensors and stuff like that in real quietly that they don't really do anything with.
Camera sensors, computer vision.
Yeah. The stuff that they're doing to accelerate with some of the new Snapdragon stuff that's, I think, public, but I'm not sure. They're doing they're accelerating machine vision stuff to the point that you'll have Snapdragon processors in a year or two that are able to actually like do the machine vision stuff that right now has to happen in the cloud in limited ways on like devices that use basically no power. It's bananas.
Yeah, and they do it in two ways. One, to increase battery life or mm-hmm. add features that now they can add, they can devote the processing power to add because they don't need that extra processing power to sort of just run the phone.
Yeah, like voice recognition is suddenly going to get better because we have hardware machine learning in these chips that's going to accelerate the algorithms that we use to do voice recognition.
Hmm. Did you see the story about how it's estimated that Google pays Apple $3 billion a year?
For patents?
No, just so Google is the default search engine in Safari.
$3 billion?
That's the estimate.
$3 billion. I mean, how many phones does Apple sell a year? How many phones are running iOS right now? A billion? Two?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's $1 per user doesn't seem unfair.
Pure profit. $3 billion. That by that math, based on their public statements, that licensing fee is 5% of Apple's profits.
How much money does Apple does Google make on those billion users, right?
It's a lot, right? Yeah. But who's in a position of strength here? If Google said, we want to stop paying $3 billion a year, which is, by the way, a ton of money.
But Google clearly has a spreadsheet someplace that says, look, the average user spends $3. We earn $3 on these users.
$3 billion is a lot of money.
So if they make $2 billion on a $1 billion investment, that's pretty good return.
But can they afford to not pay the licensing? Could Apple afford not to receive licensing? And would they? What would they do? What would the Google?
They're not going to go with Bing. Yeah, I guess they do use Bing on Siri, right?
Yeah. So what is the option? They go to someone else and try to get a licensing fee from someone else.
They try to squeeze money from Microsoft,
or not have a default search around for someone convenience wise to type
they're,
in
they're
a search
not
engine.
Not have a default search,
right?
They probably would spin their own search. It would be terrible.
Oh God, that sounds horrible.
They would make no money and spend money on spinning up their own search.
There's something compelling about a search that's not driven by advertising.
So, right now you can actually choose between Google, Bing, Yahoo, and DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo is an Asia thing, isn't it? I assume.
No, DuckDuck.
How about that? So they would just make it not the default. They would leave Google in there. They just can't. No one can determine how many people would switch back to Google manually.
That's right.
DuckDuckGo is the search engine that doesn't track you. They don't do advertising. They don't store personal information. I like DuckDuckGo.
And Yahoo used to outsource all the stuff to Bing anyway. That was part of that deal.
Oh, yeah?
It was largely the same results.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think most people would switch back and they'd probably be better off.
The inconvenience of having to type in a search engine URL.
No. They would just go into the settings and switch it back.
Oh. Oh, make that like...
Yeah.
Oh, would Apple be malicious enough to remove that default?
Defaults make a huge difference.
Bad idea. I know they make a huge difference, yeah. But is it worth $3 billion?
If they make $9 billion off of $3 billion, they'll keep paying it. If they don't make that money, then they'll stop paying
it. But I'm saying maybe if they didn't pay the $3 billion, they would only make $7, in which case it is worth it.
Maybe, but I bet if they didn't pay the $3 billion, they'd make $2 billion, and that is not worth it.
No, that's not.
That's the math.
Yeah,
that's the math they have to figure out, and no one knows
who's going
to
switch
until someone makes a bold move.
Because here's the thing: it's not like Apple. If they change that, it's not like Apple's going to make it easy and give them an API level way to change the default search engine back from like a click on the Google homepage. They'll have to click a thing, and then they'll have to follow some instructions on that page, and people will get to like step three and be like, fuck this,
right.
And then they'll just use DuckDuckGo.
And Apple also, can they control what the default search engine is on like a third-party browser like Chrome? They can't.
No.
Right? And
but
they
have
the data.
Chrome.
Anyone using a third-party browser knows how to get in the system settings anyway.
Yeah,
right.
So they know the data of like how many people are using third-party.
Those,
I use Chrome.
A fraction of a percent of people use third-party browsers, I bet.
Yeah. Safari is the only browser that has access to some hardware acceleration.
Yeah. Not that changed with iOS 9.
But everyone has to use their JavaScript engine.
Yeah, everybody has to use their JavaScript engine.
Yeah, that's what
engine.
It is. Yeah. That's right.
It's all the same browser. It's just a different frame around it.
Any other technology news you guys want to go over?
Do you want to talk about the Cloudflare thing? It's a little political, but there's a neo-Nazi website that was a subscriber to Cloudflare. If you don't know, Cloudflare is a service that sites that get DDoS'd use. They basically sit at the DNS level and they analyze traffic coming in. And if it looks like a legitimate user, then they push it onto the site to the actual servers. And if it doesn't, then they bitbucket it someplace so that if your site gets DDoS'd, Cloudflare will stop that DDoS. They've been around for a long time. And they do a lot of good work. They work on like Steve Security Steve Gibson's site. and a lot of other like high traffic, high target sites. They, the CEO, they've had an internal conversation about how they want to handle the new fascist movement in America and whether they want to keep those people's sites from getting DDoS'd. And they posted an internal – they didn't post it. An internal letter leaked yesterday that said basically, look, we're taking off this one particular site that uses Cloudflare. This is a capricious decision on the part of the CEO. This was from the CEO to the employees. You know, I don't think it's right that one person or one company can decide who gets to be on and who doesn't get to be on the internet. But at the same time, I go on the forums of this site, and the users there are saying, "Hey, Cloudflare is letting us keep doing this. They're clearly one of us, and we don't want that to represent our company. So we want to make it really clear that we don't support these people." And like it puts up an interesting like it, as the internet has become more centralized over the last decade, as the web itself has become more centralized, it's an interesting question, right? Like Jeff Bezos, as the CEO of Amazon and the owner of AWS, hosts a massive, massive percentage of the world's websites right now. And presumably at any point, if there's somebody on that site that he doesn't like, whether, you know, he can say, I mean, it's not presumably, he can say, look, this site is against our terms of service. The terms of services are all vague and open enough that you can change them at any moment. You know, they can kill any website they want, from Tested to Netflix to whatever else it happens to be. And it's like I am all for Cloudflare turning off. I mean, just to be clear, they're not actually turning off the site. They're just saying, hey, we're not going to protect you from DDoSs anymore, so the internet will work that out the rest of the way. I thought it was an interesting, like, the email that he sent out to the internal staff was contradictory in and of itself, and I agreed with all of the different contradictions. Basically,
I feel, from what I've read, this group can't even get a website up to begin with.
They moved DNS to Russia.
They shut them down too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So GoDaddy got rid of them. Google said no after 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then they moved to Russia, and Russia said no.
Oh well, life finds a way.
I guess.
Problem for the modern age. I think that does it for technology news. The Essential phone is on sale now, by the way, if we care about phones.
This is Andy Rubin's phone?
Andy Rubin's phone.
Why is it special?
The lack of bezels.
Daydream?
Super lack of bezels, yeah. And it's a beautiful design. It's a premium
charge
phone.
Wirelessly?
I think it does.
Is the camera good?
Camera is supposed to be good. There's camera attachments. But yeah, risky venture to spend so much money on a startup's phone, even with that pedigree.
Yeah.
Before we move on to our next segment, I do want to thank the sponsor of this week's episode, and that is Eero. Whatever your Wi-Fi needs, Eero has the power to seamlessly blanket your home in fast, reliable Wi-Fi via Ethernet, wireless, or any combination. Simply set it on a flat surface or plug the Eero beacon into a wall outlet to expand coverage in any room. Not to mention, with the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio, the second generation Eero is now tri-band and twice as fast as its predecessor, which lets you do more in every room of your home simultaneously. And with the addition of a new Thread radio, Eero can now connect to low-power devices such as doors, doorbells, locks, and other sensors. Meanwhile, the Eero beacon is half the size but even more powerful than the original Eero. And whichever model you choose, with Eero's incredible customer support, you can get you can call and get a hold of a Wi-Fi expert within 30 seconds. I set up Eero with the new Eero beacon in my home, and now I have access to all sorts of nooks and crannies, Wi-Fi, in places that I didn't have access before, which lets me connect to my phone and my Nintendo Switch and play almost anywhere. Setup's pretty easy. You just download the app, run the app, and it tells you whether you've put your phone in a good spot. You can check your bandwidth to see if it's a Wi-Fi problem or if it's your internet connection's problem. Now, you listeners of the podcast can get free overnight shipping by going to Eero.com, selecting overnight as a shipping option, and using the offer code TEST, T-E-S-T, at checkout. Again, that's Eero.com with the offer code TEST, and thank them for sponsoring this week's episode.
The VR Minute, virtual reality this week.
Will left the room. The only person working in VR left the room to kick off the VR Minute.
All
Hopefully
right.
He's leaving to bring something back that's interesting that we can talk about on camera.
Last week we reported that Altspace died. It was a sad episode.
Super sad.
Altspace, one of the original metaverses, a space where people would gather together, maybe watch a live concert together, discuss, create their own costumes. Well, it's back.
It's saved. Yeah. Just like SoundCloud, saved with with new investment.
But yeah, anonymous investment. But they said that somebody stepped in and they said, you know, we want this to keep going. And what's interesting, as Engadget reported, was that Palmer Luckey had just posted a poll on Twitter not too long before they got saved that said, should I try to save AltSpace VR? Yes or no? And 67% said yes.
Why would people say no?
I'm not sure why 33% said no. You know, maybe they're like me with the last story, which is like, well, if it's supposed to die, let it die. But it's pretty early in VR, so I think it's a good idea to give these plants a little more water. See what happens.
All right. Glad it's going on. Yeah. Congratulations to those guys. Res Infinite also came out this past week for VR.
Well, it was in VR.
It was a PSVR launch title.
Yeah, it was on PSVR, and it was one of those games that I never bought, but everyone recommended it. Like, even like our buddy Dave Reese.
It's the best game.
People from different corners are like saying, yeah, if you get PSVR, definitely try Res Infinite. So it's out now on Steam.
It's perfect.
And Oculus Home. I don't know.
It's perfect. I think it's only on Steam, actually. I don't know if it's on Oculus. Is it on Oculus Home, too? Okay.
Now, I have not played it yet. But
have you played Res?
Yeah, of course. But my son played it, and he was just kind of meh on it.
What?
I'm telling you. And he's pretty good at, like, he's got a pretty good judge of cool VR. So I don't know.
I got to have a talk with him.
If it was, can you do first person?
No, it's always third person.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
too out of body?
I don't know.
It's
maybe he's not into the aesthetic. I love the aesthetic.
I mean, it references a lot of stuff. It references like if you don't like Res, you're not going to like Res Infinite. There's nothing new there that's going to make you like it better.
The gameplay is basically you highlight a bunch of enemies and then you let go and you fire missiles at them. That's the extent of it.
But everything,
you can use both hands.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Motion controlled, but everything reacts to how you deploy these missiles and shoot enemies.
It's a rhythm game.
The music comes to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it has a very like late 90s cyberpunk aesthetic. It was originally a Dreamcast game, I guess, or a PS2 game. I think it was Dreamcast.
I think Dreamcast, too.
It's Tetsuya Mizuguchi made it.
Oh. It wasn't Jeff Minter?
No. Whole thing? No. This is... So, Miz made Space Channel 5, and there was another remake of this. He did a lot of like rhythm-y music games. He's really into like electronic J-pop and stuff like that.
They call it synesthetic because it's combining your audio senses and visual senses and motion to all unify.
Well, when it originally was released for the Dreamcast, I guess it had they called it the trance vibrator, but it was basically a thing that was, it wasn't that kind of vibrator. It's basically a thing you were supposed to like put on your someplace, I guess, and it pulsed in time with the music.
How about that?
So yeah, because the Dreamcast controllers, of course, didn't have rumble.
So have you tried it? I have not tried it.
Okay, we gotta try it.
Yeah, we gotta try that, and also
it's really good.
The new zombie Killing Floor Incursion.
Oh, is that out now?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So gotta try that.
That's
as well.
Co-op. I would love to play that with either of you guys.
Yeah, it's on the Oculus platform. Well.
Oh well.
Yeah. Speaking of rumbling, there's
what is that supposed to mean, Norm?
Well,
I think we all know.
We know where your preferences lie. I mean, you have both headsets. You can
I have one headset plugged in every day for work.
Would you say you're platform agnostic?
So on a personal level or a professional level?
Personal level.
Probably not.
Well, he has access to new hardware. He has.
That's true.
Latest and greatest. We're going to talk about in just a second. First, we'll talk about Rumble. Oculus is putting out new buffered haptics features for, I guess, better control over the motors inside.
This stuff is really cool.
So this is just inside. A software update, to be clear.
Yes. Yeah, so existing Oculus Touch controllers, right now it's like a waveform, I think, they send, and it lets you change the frequency and the intensity.
Not a whole lot you can do with it, though.
With those. But in VR, something that we know is that it doesn't need to be as strong feedback as what you're expecting in the real world. It's all relative.
Yeah.
Like as long as you have a good spectrum with fine delineations of feedback and precision location, you can convince a lot.
Right? I think that this is a something is better than nothing area, because once we get stronger haptics and we look back on this era, this is going to seem pretty weak.
But I mean, the experience with the first wave of hardware is that like if you play Zenblade, you have the goggles on. If your eyes see the impact of the piece of fruit between the sword, you hear the impact of the piece of fruit between the sword, and then you get just the tiniest of tiny bumps. Yeah. It's enough that your brain is like, oh right, I hit the fruit.
Better than nothing.
So what they're saying with this new system is, one, latency is reduced from 33 milliseconds to 10 milliseconds.
That's the big deal.
That's supposed to be a really big deal.
Because you queue them up, I think.
Mm-hmm. And then also, so it's better alignment between the rumble and what you see in the headset. And then also, it's supposed to allow better adjustment of those vibrations and frequencies. So you can actually adjust the amplitude, which is the strength of that, between 0 and 255 degrees of force more often. Right now, you can only hit, because the way that the motors hit. You can't like have it in max strength the whole time.
So I was hoping for a demo link at the bottom of the release article, but there's no, you know,
there's no demo app.
I want to feel
probably, there's probably a demo app in the SDK.
It's been a few days now. I bet there's something out now.
But something that the touch controllers do not have is...
Are we moving on?
Yeah.
I want to say one quick thing.
Oh, yes.
When this came out, there was a thread in our Oculus about it, and everyone in that thread, I was shocked. Like, there's a sub-thread developed. Everyone was saying, you know, if you want to feel great haptics, try 11 Table Tennis.
Yeah. Really? Which we've done. Yeah. We played Table Tennis.
And everyone says the haptics in that game are unlike anything else. Like, if you have a ball that's balancing, just rolling on the paddle itself, you can literally tell where the ball is on the paddle.
HD haptics.
That's interesting.
Yeah. How many ice cubes are in the Switch controller, this Joy-Con?
I was going to say, there's games out now for the Switch. I want to say it's like a Namco Museum or something that uses the HD rumble really, really, really for evil. It's not good.
What are you talking about for evil?
It's bad. Why? It's just a bad implementation. It's really way, way, way too strong.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm. But something that the touch controllers do not have is the ability to use them without actually holding the controllers, which the Knuckles controllers, Will's holding them in his hand right now. You got to watch the video. Will has Knuckles controllers.
I got the Nux, yo.
For Steam VR. How are they?
They're prototype hardware, but they're really neat. You can, basically when you put them in, they have, am I talking in the right spot? Yeah. They have capacitive sensors along the inside edge where your fingers grip. So you, I guess I should take a step back. There's a neoprene stretchy thing that you jam your fingers into. And then that just holds the controller in place on your hand, right?
And you have to adjust that so it's at the right place on your hand.
Oh, so you don't have to change that, like undo a strap every time you put
it on. No, you just jam your finger in.
That's
and you usually
nice.
Leave it tight enough. Like, I leave it tight enough that it just kind of rests naturally. The capacitive sensor, the touchpad is more of a bowl on this than just a flat pad like it was in the initial wands. But the interesting thing is that the whole bottom inside edge of the grip where your fingers go is capacitive, as well as the trigger, just like on the Oculus Touch. But it can model your hand movement based on where your hands hit this edge. So you get actual, it's not one-to-one finger movement, but it's close enough that it works really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a jump to like learning how to use it. You do a kind of initial calibration process where you grip and release, grip and release, grip and release until your fingers look like they're in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that anytime that the calibration starts to drift, which is, I assume, one of the things that they're working on. It seems like that's even gotten better.
The calibration specifically for those fingers?
Like anytime your hand moves in the grips, you need to recalibrate.
Oh, gotcha.
Like where your fingers are, or else you end up in a weird situation where like your fingers are all splayed out in an unnatural looking way. The new pad is a dramatic improvement because the depth of that bowl, the thumb pad, lets you see exactly, like, without having to look down at your hand to see where the dot is, you can tell where your finger is because it's a much, much, much deeper concave bowl.
So the radius, the diameter of this circle is smaller than on your Vive controllers, but it has a deeper recess, which is more ergonomic because your finger actually dips down.
Well, and I think it's probably about the same surface area because it's deeper. I'm not 100% on that.
Is it still have the linear actuators for that the haptic feedback?
I don't know about that. I haven't looked at that. I would assume so based on how it works.
Hmm.
It seems it's clickier now too, so you press it less by accident. And then there's two buttons now. You know, what used to be the grip button and that kind of in-game menu button are on either side of the pad. And the Steam menu button is the round one on the bottom.
Yeah. And then it's still a two-stage trigger. What I found is that because of the way you wrap it around your hand, it's not an even amount of pressure along the ridge of the top and back. It more grips closer to your pinky on the bottom of your hand.
Yeah, like the crook of your thumb and your forefinger. It's very comfortable. I've used them for extended periods.
So I actually, like, just putting it on, I'm pushing my hand all the way to the bottom because that's where I want it to grip so that my thumb, my fingers can access the buttons, but they don't have to necessarily grip hold onto it. Like, I want to not be gripping on this as a default pose.
The things that are good about this is that it has the same benefit the Oculus Touch controller has, in that there is a canonically correct way to hold this. So if you're doing something that requires, you know, IK to do elbows or wrists like I do, it's really, really good. Like, you get a much cleaner signal out of the hand position about what the actual, like, the, like, you can infer much more about the orientation of the hand from the position of the controller than you can with the wands, which people can hold, you know, like a magic wand or like a baseball bat or like a golf club.
And they now are matched. Left and right are have to be left and right.
Left, right or left and right. That's good. I mean, that's easy to figure out based on position with the headset, and they have APIs to fix that. The thing that I've noticed is that the trigger seems like it's a little far forward. I mean, they're still working on the hardware shape and design for this. They've actively said that. So these may not be what the final controllers look like. They may not even ever make the controllers. I don't know. It feels like the trigger is a little far forward to me, though. That's my one piece of feedback that I've sent them so far. And then the software is, you know, they're figuring out. There's new stuff with the software every week. But
and you mentioned the additional button, right?
The additional button is what used to be the grip button. So it's the same number of buttons as before.
These are the same?
One of them is the menu button, and one of them shows up as the grip button. When you use these with legacy games that don't support Knuckles yet, everything, you have like a Steam controller style pop-up that lets you choose different options for models. So like you can use the grip button as the grip button, you can use the grip as the grip button, and you can toggle it on or toggle it off.
Mm-hmm.
So you, like, you can have toggle on, toggle off, or grip to hold, however you want to do it, and it maps it without. So old games work with the new controllers, no problem.
I want to know what it's like to play Echo Arena with this. I know you haven't played much Echo Arena.
I have not played much Echo Arena.
But it is supported by Revive. But
I don't think Revive supports Knuckles yet.
The Revive dev has Knuckles.
Okay.
So it will soon if it doesn't
already.
I'll
have to look at Revive again. I haven't looked at it in a while.
That. I mean, there's a way that the games, existing games, will automatically have compatibility because mm-hmm. there is parity in terms of the actions. But really, the advantage of this is going to be new games that actually don't expect you to hold on to controllers and animate as such.
Like, yeah.
Like, you know, having guns that appear in your hand when you actually grab them and hold on to them as a natural pose, as opposed to pushing a button. You know, gunslinging, doing a duel in a game like Dead Buried, it's going to be much more interesting when you're hovering your hands, when you're not actually gripping something, and you have that additional action.
Yeah, I like that.
As a mechanic. Well,
and because you have a real definitive moment of when you release and when you grab, versus, say, pulling a trigger or even squeezing the grab button on the Oculus Touch controllers, which I think is the best way to do it right now.
And grabbing is not it's not binary.
Right.
Grabbing is because they have multiple – the capacitance on the grip is taking multiple fingers.
Exactly.
The developer can make a grab when you have three fingers on, two fingers on, when you grab in a certain way.
So a lot of the challenge with this is figuring out that nuance, like figuring out whether you should grab at the beginning, like the very moment you detect fingers coming in, or when you wait until they get all the way down. Like it's less ambiguous for the user than, say, pulling a trigger to grab something. So you can do things like juggle, right? It's hard to juggle, but somebody's going to get there sooner rather than later. It's
very
pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about it on this week's episode of Projections, shooting a video using the Knuckles controller.
Fun.
Yeah. I hope so.
Testing this week. Hey, what have you guys been testing?
Aside from Knuckles controllers, Will, anything you've been testing?
I got a G-Sync monitor.
Oh.
I was always curious, and I needed a 4K IPS panel, so I bought a 4K IPS G-Sync monitor, which was kind of expensive.
Why did you need a G-Sync monitor?
I needed a 60 hertz monitor, and I needed a 4K monitor.
Okay.
And I wanted a G-Sync monitor because it was like $150 more than the non-G-Sync monitor, so I figured, you know, let's get crazy. But the 4K G-Sync monitors are only 60 hertz panels. They're not 144 hertz panels, which is what the non 4K ones are, like the 2560 by 1440 ones.
And one of the advantage of a G-Sync monitor is if you are running games natively at 4K on your computer screen, you can sometimes dip below 60, dip below.
You can dip way below 60 if you're running 4K native, yeah.
And still not see tearing.
I think it's as much about the frame jitter and stuff as well, like the micro stutters and stuff like that seem to have gone away when I switched to the the G-Sync monitor.
Isn't the idea if it dipped, it would drop to 30? And like you wouldn't get that sweet variable. Like 48. The G-Syncs are variable.
Yeah.
But a non-G-Sync would dip further down, and it would become much more stuttery. Now you get whatever frame rate.
Mismatch.
You'll get half a frame, and then it'll draw the next frame.
Okay.
Yeah.
The thing that is nice is when you're doing like fast movements, it's much crisper. It seems like, you have much less blur as you're doing a fast movement, like in a first person shooter or something like that.
And that's on a 144 hertz, which is different. That's about, because 144 hertz monitors running at 2560 or even at 1080. People play competitive shooters; they love those monitors.
I've never even seen
so
that.
Smooth.
Yeah, I kind of
ridiculous.
Like since I'm streaming a lot of, I was playing PUBG at 4K scaled down a little bit in the engine, so I had a solid 100 frames a second. And then I set up a 2PC streaming setup, which means it has to be 1080p, which means that...
2PC streaming setup.
Yeah, so instead of running... So if you run OBS on the machine that you're playing game on, it adds a couple of frames of lag.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which is bad.
Yeah.
I realized I was playing without streaming one day, and I realized I was much better at the game than when I was streaming.
Yeah,
a couple frames is bad.
A couple hundred milliseconds.
And I had 2 PCs just sitting around and a capture card. So I set up a 2PC streaming setup, which was an interesting challenge. The upshot is that if you use a piece of software called VoiceMeter Banana, you can basically split. Do you know about VoiceMeter Banana?
Oh, yes. We had to use it for Big Screen for a while.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. To stream Big Stream?
No, to stream within Big Stream. Yeah.
So you pipe audio out to your headphones and to the HDMI capture card, and then everything just kind of works. But yeah. It was interesting setting that up. I ended up setting up with a Blackmagic Intensity Pro 4K capture card.
Between that and the 4K. Green screen. Do you have an eSports chair yet?
I don't know. Look, Steelcase, after we finish here, I'm going to go over to your showroom and look at a Steelcase gesture. It's the wire cutter recommendation for the happiest ass you'll ever have.
You're not streaming in 4K, are you?
No, you can't stream in 4K.
So you just capture in 4K?
I just capture in 4K. Oh, man. I haven't been here since I talked about getting Comcast Gigabit.
You have Comcast Gigabit?
Comcast Gig. That's what they call it.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah,
is it fiber?
No.
Oh, it's still cable.
It's DOCSIS 3.1.
So you get a gigabit down.
Gigabit down.
How much up?
35 megabits up.
Okay.
So it's not great. I think that they're going to have symmetric soon. It's just, software updates.
What does your real world speed test get?
900.
That's not bad.
So it's like the normal 10%.
What do you get on Sonic?
980?
Yeah.
980. All right.
Yeah. It's like 900 to 940 is the fastest I've seen.
980 up.
That's the winner. I downloaded Doom in 12 minutes.
That's the most gangster I've ever heard you, Norm. Sonic actually distributed Frisbees in my neighborhood recently because they're coming to my hood.
Did you tell them that the Frisbees are nice, but you'd rather have fiber?
They're actually like...
Oh, is this a way to like get in your backyards? Like, oh, the Frisbee went to the backyard. We need to get in there and get up. And then now we're... Oh, might as well go up the...
Let's fiber you up. Yep. Yep. No?
I don't know.
Anyway, the Comcast gig was like $30, $40 a month extra over what I was paying for $250. So I was happy to get it for the upstream.
Awesome. That's great. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Gigabit is gigabit. That's great.
Yeah. Anything on your side, Jeremy?
No. I've just been on the road. I've been testing USB dongles for my MacBook Pro.
Oh, no. USB-C, the nightmare continues.
Lost 3 to this trip.
Oh, no.
Somebody, gave it a little yank. They fall right apart.
What?
USB to USB-C adapters.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's to be expected, right? I mean, they're a tiny little
thing. No, that's not to be expected. Not okay.
If you have an adapter, that's how it goes. I mean, these little holes are tiny. You got a big honking USB, A thing going into it.
That is not a normal cost of doing business. Did you return it? Did you take it back to him?
No, I'm talking about like some kid like pulls his iPad and it's like plugged into the computer. You can't. That's part of doing business. So I guess the only real solution is to get native cables or use a hub.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Instead of plugging, are you charging the iPad on this?
The computer was like the charge hub for the train car.
There's a company out there. They're called Anker, A-N-K-E-R.
Yeah, I heard of them, yeah.
For $24, you can get a charge port that has 6 ports on it.
Mm-hmm.
It plugs into a normal 120-volt wall plug, and then the kids can plug into that, and they won't destroy your $80 adapters.
That's also a solution.
Yeah.
Were there power outlets in the train?
One.
Oh.
Just one?
One.
Was it a real one or was it one of those like real 5-amp?
No, it's fine. I was
5-amp electric razor only
deals. I don't know
deals.
How much amps you get, but it was 120 volts.
Okay.
Charged the computer and everything else.
Man, I when they do the train jam, I wonder where I guess they must have charging stations.
In the observation car, there's outlets everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you go get some work done out there.
So I need some new adapters.
I want to go take a train. I feel like I could get so much work done on a train. No distractions.
You really can.
I don't feel like 48 hours isn't enough.
For a jam?
No, for a train. Mm. I want more. I want a week on a train.
I had a friend.
Some people do it.
You know, Amtrak does a writer's fellowship, Norm, where they basically give you a pass that's good for 3 months. You can go anywhere you
right.
want.
Right. That's like the American Airlines right. golden ticket.
Well, but only for 3 months.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to write. You have to write poems or something while you're on the train about how majestic the West is.
Not memes.
No memes.
What about you? Memes you test work? Anything?
What do we got going on? So I was down at LA, talked a little about this on Still Untitled, but helped put together a big CNC, a 4x8 CNC with cool. a two-head rotary tool and plasma cutter.
What did you cut with the plasma cutter? We didn't talk about
we
it.
We talked cut a steel tested sign.
Okay.
Yeah, that we'll have bring it back up. It makes you have to put it over water, and it gets the water really dirty.
How thick can you cut?
You cut thick steel.
Really?
Quarter inch.
So you could make like rings. Like you could cut a ring out and then polish the ring, burnish, bevel.
I don't think you get so it does a pierce and then like plasma cutting is this whole science.
Is a thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
How thick was the metal you cut?
It was 1/8 inch. A steel sheet. I want to say 1/8 inch.
How quick was it?
It was very fast.
Like faster than a laser cutter?
Almost.
Mm.
Almost. Wow.
That's really cool. I remember when we went to that to tech shop and we saw the plasma cutter there. Or no, I guess it was a water jet there.
Yeah.
What's the edge like?
So you can't get perfect consistencies on the edge. And the time it takes, actually the longest time it takes is to do the initial pierce and then the cutting. Because it's all like varying the voltage.
Is there a thing underneath as well that catches the other end or is it just like...
Water.
Okay, it just all falls into the water?
Yeah. Sorry, what was your question?
What is the edge like?
Oh, the edge. Edge is pretty clean. I mean, you'll still need to do a little bit of knee burring, but it's still pretty clean.
But is it like a laser where there's like a little bit of a figure eight, or is it or a V, or is it like a is it like some is it like the, straight the, like a saw? Like what's the curve like?
Oh, there's a little bit of a curve, little bit.
Okay. Yeah,
but it's pretty straight.
What is plasma?
Plasma is the fourth state of matter. Liquid metal,
nothing
liquid,
gold.
Liquid, solid, gas, plasma.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, we're going to get some experts to talk about it in the future.
Okay.
It gets really hot and the electrons are in a free state.
There's no experts in the room?
No.
The electrons no. are in a free state.
Definitely not.
I have a fucking biochemistry degree, you a-holes.
All right, and we have an outro this week?
Oh.
Is that it?
Sometimes we talk about what's coming up on the show, I mean on the site, but we can go straight to outros. What have we got? Yeah, this was submitted a day ago. Has to be gold.
Oh.
From Toasted Beans.
I'd be really impressed if it was me yelling about something earlier in the episode.
What? We're doing this live?
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
Gary's going to be back with another take.
Yeah. Yes, back in every way that it's possible to be back.
Do it! Just do it!
That was angry.
Oh, wow.
Oh, hey, I got a letter from SoundCloud, by the way, the other day that said we were almost out of downloads on that tested outro number 2.
Oh, no.
So you need to re-upload it someplace. You should probably download it again and then re-upload it someplace else.
Well, good thing SoundCloud's still going to be around.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you next week.